You're listening to another episode of
Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott.
All right, Total Talk Nonsense with John and Scott. I'm John.
And I'm Scott.
And this is episode 116.
Episode 116, take four,
take
John.
Four.
We had three misstarts.
Right.
But we're on track now, baby.
They weren't misstarts. They were just, I'm getting a little rusty.
No, you had to rewire the whole configuration.
Rewired.
Because we are back in the home studio.
Yeah.
And not only that, John, the band practiced. The band practiced in the home studio, all electronic.
Yeah.
What that means is John was on electronic drums. I had the bass plugged right into the mixing board. Rick went into an amp and then into a mixing board. We had some mics. And then headphones, baby. We practiced using headphones.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
For me, anyway, and maybe for you, I don't know. Probably not for you.
No.
But for me, to make a tighter rhythm section, I could really hear the bass kick. Practicing through the headphones.
The bass kick?
The bass kick drum. What do you call it? What is the terminology?
Whatever,
what
man.
Is the proper terminology?
The kick, man.
The kick. You
I
just call
the
it the kick.
Just
the kick, man.
Give me the bass kick.
So I could.
Can you give me the bass kick again?
We used to practice in the studio, you know,
yeah.
The whole acoustic and the full volume where our ears were bleeding at the end of the night.
Yeah.
And the sound is bouncing off the walls. It was hard for me to pick up the kick.
Well, except when I had the subwoofer hooked up to
right,
it. Remember
right.
that?
Oh, that was nice. Yeah, when you had the sub hooked up.
That was nice.
But
big 18 pumping at you.
With the headphones, I can hear the kick crystal clear. And my ears aren't ringing at the end of the night.
Well, you could always play with headphones on.
I think I might do that.
You know? Yeah.
Because I totally dug that.
We practiced.
Yeah, we practiced, and Rick was sick. You know, Rick had a heart attack, but...
I know.
He probably looked worse when we practiced than he did when he had a heart attack. I've never seen him look so bad.
He looked pitiful, man. He was... Ugh. I hope I don't get sick. I hate when people are sick, and then they insist on being close to you.
How close?
He was pretty close to you.
Yeah,
he was,
I'm
what,
okay.
about 5 feet?
I did blow some tetanus today.
Some tetanus?
I think it was a one-time deal, you know?
Really?
I don't think it's something that's going to lead into any worse type of a situation.
No?
I think my prognosis is good.
Just shit soup?
Right.
Little shit soup?
So, do you want to play one of our tunes right off the get-go from practice?
Sure.
Now, this is the first time we've practiced in probably a month, and that's because we have a gig January 19th at the Big and Tap, John. That's next Saturday. So, by the time you hear this podcast, you need to start making arrangements.
Which one should I play?
I don't care. Whatever one you'd like to play. But, so we come into John's home studio. We haven't practiced in a month. Rick is sick as shit. And you'll be able to hear it in his voice.
Yeah.
And we muddled our way through about, what, an hour's worth of songs?
Yeah.
And John recorded the whole thing. So we pulled a couple of tracks to share with you.
Yeah.
To give you a preview of what you may hear if you show up at the Beacon next Saturday.
Right. A little better, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Much better.
Much better, yeah. At the Beacon, it'll be much, much better.
Right.
Because, you know, the whole thing about it is you get to see us, and we're really physically intimidating as a three-piece unit.
Right.
Right on.
All right.
So whatever you want to play.
Yeah.
It's okay by me.
Breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law. So much for the golden future, I can't even start. I've had every promise broken, there's anger in my heart. Feeling like you never said, have a clue. And you can't define yourself doing the same thing too.
That's out of sight, isn't it?
So for some of our listeners, like a Way of the Bob or an Arrow Wolf, they can cut that out, throw some guitar on, send it to us, and we'll check it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And that reminds me that Stephen C., the great Stephen C., took video of the entire punky,
which I've never seen. You keep, oh yeah, yeah,
right, right.
That, oh, oh.
So I cut out the clips of Pauly B and Tony Hearn and put them on our website on the media page, but I never went back and cut out the clips of just us,
right,
to put on our website. So
Thanks a lot.
I need to, yeah. I'm, hey, come on, man. I haven't even sent out the t-shirts for the winners yet. Okay?
Nice.
So I have priorities.
Garbage.
But I need to do that as well.
As well.
So we did cut out a couple of songs from practice, so you may be hearing some other songs this evening.
Right.
Right on, John.
Right on, right on.
All right, so a couple other clips. Clips, John. It's all about clips at the start of 116. I don't know if you know this, John, but the baseball voted in some people into the Hall of Fame. Baseball,
no.
Hall of Fame. Mark McGwire was up for the Hall of Fame. This is the guy who broke the single-season home run record, which later Barry Bonds broke, right?
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
But he's caught up in the steroids thing. This guy didn't get shit for votes. Nobody voted for this guy. I think it was his first time he was eligible. But the bigger news, John, is Goose Gossage.
Goose.
You know who that is?
Yeah.
He's a picture, John. A picture.
Pitcher. He's not a picture.
For the New York Yankees back in the day.
Yeah.
When I say back in the day, that's like when we were kids.
Right.
That's back in the day.
Back in the day.
Goose Gossage got into the Hall of Fame. But this is a sound clip that I had known about. I had known about this sound clip. And I went out and I found it right when I heard the news that Goose got into the Hall of Fame so we could play it on our show, John. This is Goose Gossage from
Goose
1977.
Gossage.
Go ahead and play it.
And you motherfuckers, all you motherfuckers with a fucking pen and a fucking tape recorder, you can fucking turn it on and take it upstairs to the Batman.
Whoa.
Okay?
Okay.
Because I'm fucking sick of this fucking shit. A negative fucking bullshit. You got it? Everything that you guys read, write, these motherfuckers read, these dumb motherfuckers in the seats. Yeah, you turn it on. Turn it on, you greasy cocksucker. They read everything that you fucking write. And we hear the same fucking lines. You know what I mean? Fucking negative motherfuckers. No wonder you're fucking carrying a pad and a fucking paper around. It ain't worth the fucking shit to do anything else. Motherfucker.
Whoa.
That really is back in the day. That was like a 8-track recording, or what is that?
Reel to reel or something.
You greasy cocksuckers.
Greasy.
So congratulations to Goose Gossage from John and Scott at TTN.
Yeah, holy shit.
So then, you know, I had heard about that clip, and I found it. YouTube is fucking great, man. I mean, you could find almost anything on there. And then it made me think of the great Chicago Cubs manager, Lee Elia. You remember him, John?
Yeah.
I really don't remember too much about his record, if he was any good, anything like that. He was from the early 80s. That's all I know. But the thing that I remember about Lee Elia is he went off on some reporters, similar to Goose Gossage.
Yeah.
But he really came down on the Chicago fans. And here's a classic clip now from Lee Elia.
I'll tell you one fucking thing. I hope we get fucking hotter than shit just to stuff it up them 3,000 fucking people that show up every fucking day. Because if they're the real Chicago fucking fans, they can kiss my fucking ass right downtown and print it. They're really, really behind you around here. My fucking ass. What the fuck am I supposed to do? Go out there and let my fucking players get destroyed every day and be quiet about it for the fucking nickel-dime people to show up? The motherfuckers don't even work. That's why they're out at the fucking game. They only go out and get a fucking job and find out what it's like to go out there and a fucking living. 85% of the fucking world's working. The other 15 come out here. Fucking playground for the cocksuckers.
Wow.
Rip them motherfuckers. Rip them cocksuckers like the fucking players. Got guys busting their fucking ass and them fucking people too. And that's the Cubs? My fucking ass. They talk about the great fucking support that the players get around here. I haven't seen it this fucking year.
Wow.
You remember that, John?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember here all the fucking, though.
Well, the interesting...
There was no YouTube back then.
Right. Well, we heard the kind of the sanitized version.
Yeah.
Which was all just one long beep. But the interesting thing to me is both Goose Gossage, and that was like late 70s, and Lee Elia, early 80s, both in baseball, cocksucker was a huge term. I mean, they both use cocksucker.
And we get made fun of for saying cocksucker.
Who makes fun of us for saying that?
The word whore.
For saying cocksucker?
Yeah. Well, they say cocksucker. Like, what are they, like 80?
I thought we were bringing back the cocksucker.
Cocksucker.
Well, you had Kevin Smith who changed it to cocksmoker, right?
Yeah. I like cocksmoker.
I like cocksmoker, but cocksucker's classic.
Cocksucker.
It's classic. You know
what's with the word whore, man? She never calls anymore.
Never
what's
calls.
Up what's up with that?
So, do you ever watch Deadwood on HBO?
No.
It's about the gold rush and the town Deadwood back in the whenever 1870s or whatever.
Right.
They say cocksucker every other word, and I'm wondering how historically accurate that is. And it makes me wonder, what is the origin of cocksucker? Who first said
what
cocksucker?
About ask Cecil?
Yeah, I should ask Cecil.
Ask Cecil.
What is the origin of cocksucker?
There was something I read, too. When did dick become an offensive term? Because there's lots of people named Dick.
Right. And how did the male genitalia come to be called dick?
Dick.
It's like a pun, come to be called dick. Which reminds me, I'll go in order. I'll pull it back. I'm all over the place today. I don't know why.
It's you know, it's the end of a week.
It is the end
of
a week.
One, depending on how you look at it.
It depends. You know, and that's something you could have used last week. Depends.
Depends, yeah.
Now,
hey, interestingly, do you know what 80-year-old pussy smells like?
Depends.
Depends.
Yeah.
depends on what?
Now, the interesting thing, and I didn't have a chance to do this, I wanted to pull clips to show your inebriation in the last episode.
Why must we relive
that was
my drunkenness?
That was something else.
Well,
something
here's
else.
The thing. I think the reason why I got so freaking hammered was that I was a little nervous about talking about this thing that happened to me. You know,
you mean the most extended shit story we've ever heard?
Yeah,
it was not a one part, but a two part.
Well, it was
shit
taking
story.
Forever because I wasn't
You're not comfortable
talking about blowing ass on the sheets in the blast line.
Do you feel obligated that you have to talk about ass? Because I talk about ass. Like do you?
I said I don't think I should talk about it. You said, oh come on, why not? Come on, come on, what? Come on.
We did get a lot of feedback about your shit stories, and I failed to check the email bag. I usually do that before I come over. I print a bunch of shit out. You know, I select the greatest emails we get for the week, and I keep forgetting to do that. We need interns, man, is what we need.
What's up with that?
But we got a lot of reaction to your shit stories.
Really?
People either, it was 50-50, and they either loved it. Or they fucking hated it.
What do you mean hated it?
I'm just paraphrasing here, of course, because I don't have the documentation in front of me, but way too much detail was a common theme. Well, I didn't need that much detail.
Well, how else could you tell the story?
I don't know how else to tell it. I thought the detail was appropriate. I thought the sound effects were appropriate. And other people loved it. They loved it. We talk about theater of the mind.
Yeah.
And they felt like they were in the goddamn toilet bowl.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
The only thing closer would have been like an aroma podcast.
Oh. You know, after a point, it didn't smell anymore.
Oh, right. When it turns into a faucet.
Yeah, it loses that. It just smells like baby poo. It's like... I don't know. It's like a bile odor.
So you didn't feel comfortable
very acidic
talking about your ass.
Yeah.
So you got hammered, man.
I mean, know.
You were.
I was drunk when I got to work.
Well, you just today for episode 116, what you did, this is like a beer glass. How big is a beer glass? Like
it's
a standard.
It's a pint.
It's a pint. So what John does is he fills it up with ice. Excuse me. And then you fill it with Knob Creek.
Yeah.
Pardon me.
Who's drunk now,
so
man?
The glass that you gave me today, I'm about a third of the way through.
Yeah.
The interesting thing in 115 is you drank the whole glass.
Right.
At the 9-minute mark, you're chewing on ice because you finished the Knob Creek.
And I almost drank half a bottle. Now, I poured out of that bottle that you're still drinking out of. I poured a full glass. And then I drank almost, I'd say about 2/5, maybe, of this other bottle.
Well, I would say definitely out of 750 milliliters, you drank 325.
At least.
At least. And so you made it through the show.
Yeah.
And then what happened afterwards? You go upstairs, then what happens?
Oh, I go upstairs and I forage around in the refrigerator and pull out a big...
What is your thought process there?
I'm a little hungry.
Are you hungry, or are you saying I need something to dilute this?
Okay. Absorb it. So I look in the refrigerator, and there's all this pasta. So I pull up some, what did I have? I don't know, just like a big plate of mostaccioli.
You zap it in the microwave or you eat it cold?
Yeah,
what do you
zapped
do?
It.
Uh-huh.
And I came back down here and started watching a...
on TV?
No, I was watching online a debate between... who's that fucking guy?
You don't even remember
some,
the debate.
Yeah, some atheist and a Jewish rabbi. And I must have nodded off at some point because it was done. You know, I opened my, it's over. So it was like an hour long or something. So I shut that off and stagger up to the second floor. So it's roughly three floors I have to go, right?
Two.
Yeah. No, from the basement.
Basement to the first floor to the second floor. Two.
Yeah.
One, two.
So why is it called the second floor when I go from the first floor to the second floor, but why can't it be a third floor when I'm from the basement? It's third. Well, it's not three flights, but it's two flights.
You're mixing up verbs and nouns.
Yeah.
Sure, you can call it the third floor, but you only go up two flights of stairs.
Right.
The action is two flights.
Yeah.
All right.
But
so
I'm
make
actually,
it upstairs.
I'm actually standing on three floors. I'm on a floor right now.
Yes.
My feet on the floor. Then I walk up one flight, and I'm on a second floor.
You only have to go up two flights of stairs to get to the third floor.
Right.
Right
so
on.
So three floors.
Yes, three floors. But you made it seem like you went up three flights of stairs.
No.
Which would mean
it would be a fourth floor.
Right. You don't have a fourth floor.
No, not yet.
Not yet.
I do. I have a big attic.
Oh, you have a big attic. All right.
Yeah. Ooh. Dumbass.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I just kind of
so did the pasta work? Did it soak up some of that stuff?
No, I had some major spins. The wife didn't come into bed till like 3 a.m. She thought I was gonna hurl. So
yeah.
She stayed on the couch. And yeah, I had the spins a little bit, and at some point I must have just passed out, and then all of a sudden, bam, the alarm's going off.
Well, I remember talking to you the next day, and you said, I'm never going to drink again. You must have said that like 5 times, and here you are drinking again. What happened?
Not drinking like that.
Oh, like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to drink like that again.
Yeah.
I see. Under no circumstances.
I had the whole day was just brutal. People asking me questions.
At work?
Yeah, well, this supervisor that works for me didn't show up because one of her kids was sick. And
oh,
I'm
that
like,
is brutal.
Fuck.
So now you have to step in.
No, I've delegated to the point that we have somebody who can run backup.
Nice.
Well, you know, what if I get hit by a bus, man? The shit's got to keep working, you know?
Right on.
So I have it set up so the entire operation can run for a short period of time without me.
Well, there you have it.
But shit starts stacking up, you know, like all kinds of crap that people can't deal with starts piling up. So that's where.
But you made it through the day.
Yeah.
Then
I had to take a nap.
During work?
During lunch.
Would you go out to the car?
Yeah, for lunch. I just had a little something and
nice, without the CPAP.
Yeah.
That's out of sight.
Yeah. I just lay on my side. I recline all the way.
Yeah.
Lay on my side. And I wonder if people drive by and, like the other day I went to this place that I shop at, Casual Male XL. It's for big men.
Right.
And
strapping, I like to refer to them as. Strapping men.
I like to buy T-shirts and stuff there and guy says, I said, yeah, man, it's pretty nice out today. You know, it's warming up. It's, you know, and he says, yeah, yeah. And I don't know what I said. I said, man, I could use a nap. He goes, yeah, I see you out there once in a while when I'm coming in for work. I go, when you see me, am I sleeping? He goes, you're reclined.
On your side.
On your side. I'm not sure if. Sometimes you look like you had a heart attack and you're just laying there dead. But other than that, you know, I just drive by, see you looking like you're relaxing. And other times you're eating lunch, so that's a good sign. So yeah. So I always wonder if people think I'm slumped over and I'm gone.
That happened to me when I was little, maybe in fourth grade.
Yeah,
I was playing outside. It was really hot. And I lied down. I lived in an apartment. I lied down in the grass, or is it laid down? Somebody with good grammar, help me out. I laid down in the grass, and I fell asleep. And these two old women walked by, and they started poking me with their cane because they thought I had died or suffered, like, heat stroke or something. And they wanted to make sure. That so I got all nasty with
that. That happened to me once. I went over to a friend's house and knocked on the door like 50 times, and he never answered. And it had snowed. It was a lot of snow on the ground. And I decided to sit there and wait till they came home. And I fell asleep in the snow.
In the snow?
In the snow, in their driveway.
And who found you?
The mom.
The mom? And what did she say?
The mom. She's like poking me and saying, John, are you okay? Oh yeah, I must have fell asleep.
Just asleep.
Just sleeping. Oh, my God, you scared the hell. Because they pulled in the driveway, and there I am laying there. Yeah.
Right on.
It's right. True.
Let's turn to some other clips I brought in. Now, these are fan clips. A fan of ours, Lederhosen, sent in a link to a YouTube video, and I had to go out and cut the clips. True fans would have cut the clips themselves.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
Little later hosen.
Little later hosen.
Not
I'm just
later
kidding.
Hosen.
I'm just little, kidding.
Little.
Of course I'm kidding. But
like
here,
little.
Go ahead and play the clips that we can add to our library, John.
Library.
We can add to our library.
What the hell, man? Freaky ass motherfucking goddamn motherfucking bullshit.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Nice.
You motherfucker.
And then go ahead and play O2. I hope I grabbed the right clip.
All right.
I want you to dress up like a construction worker and fuck me in the ass.
What?
Wait a minute. Let me play
it. I want you to dress up like a construction worker and fuck me in the ass.
Is that Britney?
No.
Oh.
But if you have an interest in where do these clips come from, it's from... I guess there's some show called Cheaters or some shit like that.
Oh, yeah.
And this husband came home. He suspected his wife of cheating. And he came home and he finds his wife, but it's not with another guy. It's with two other women. And there's some total fucked up shit going on.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
And the guy's like a wigger. But the clip is out on the forum. If you look in, if you go to Sound Clips, and then I think it's the latest post in Sound Clips. Little Lederhosen posted that for us to pull those two clips out. But it's
nice.
A fascinating viewing. You know, it's about audio when you talk about podcasts, but the viewing of this, I may add it to my favorites as far as YouTube.
Why is that?
It's just. Totally disturbing. Surreal. It's not disturbing. I mean, sure, it's going to happen, but the reaction of this guy to find out he thinks his wife is cheating on him with another man, and then to walk into the situation he walks into is it's just blows your mind, man. Blows your mind.
Blows your mind. Yeah.
All right, now one last sound clip before we get on with the business, John. The business. I love GodTube.com. I love it. We've played other clips from GodTube.
Yeah.
Letter from Hell.
It's good. It's good tube.
So this one I ran across just a couple of days ago. And what the scenario is a guy is surfing the web for porn, right?
Tooling for anus.
He's tooling for anus for porn. And Jesus shows up.
Ah, nice.
Jesus, like, in full form. I mean, it's not a
full
voice.
Full on Jesus.
Yeah, it's not a voice. I'm Jesus. It's a full apparition. Apparition of Jesus.
Apparition. Apparition. Yeah, whatever.
So this video is like 10 minutes long. I just cut out the last 2 minutes. And basically what the guy does, once he's caught by Jesus.
He blows him.
No, that's at the end. he blames 10 other people for his sinning.
Oh.
And Jesus says, it's not that. It's you got to recognize it's you. And that's where the true salvation is. So this is the end part of a clip of Jesus catching a guy watching porn. Go ahead and play.
Overtaken in the ass. Yeah, like a little whore.
It's this porn
clip. Right. That's the clip he's watching, and then Jesus shows up.
Well,
right.
What are you laughing
no,
about?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Y'all been overtaken in the ass. Yeah, like a little whore.
Uh-huh. Yeah, getting fucked in the ass, yeah. Yeah, hold me down, make me take it. Yeah. Yeah, hold me down, make me take it. Yeah. Yeah, fuck me hard. Yeah, make me take it. Yeah.
Jesus. I know I shouldn't be doing this. But I'll tell you whose fault this is. This is God's fault. Where is God when I cry out to him? Where is God when I pray to him? Where is God when I ask him to remove this from me? Where is God when I ask to be a better man? Why isn't God just snapping his fingers and fixing me? Why do I have to go through life broken? It's God's fault. It's not my fault.
Is it God's fault?
That's
the
Jesus.
The Father loves you. He doesn't desire for you to stumble, but will with every temptation provide the way of escape.
Jesus, if it's not my flesh's fault, if it's not my wife, if it's not the devil, if it's not my dad, the world, the job, the computer, the church, the woman, if it's not even God's fault, whose fault is it?
Child, if you say you have no sin, the truth is not in you, and you deceive yourself. No one is without sin. But if you'll confess your sin to me, I'll be faithful and just to forgive you.
Jesus, I'm so ashamed.
That anus.
I want to be a better man. I want to be a better Christian. I want to be a disciple. But I can't. I can't push it away. I can't get delivered from it. Oh, Father, Jesus, forgive me.
Fear not.
He's down on his knees.
For I've given you the power
you
to overcome.
The fuck you
waiting
for, bitch? Start sucking.
Through the power of my blood and my resurrection and my word, you can be
by
free.
By resurrection.
You don't have to be in bondage. And behold, I'll be with you always.
Forgive me, Jesus.
I forgive you. I do not condemn you.
Isn't it kind of creepy that Jesus wants people to confess these types of sins to
and
him?
Get down on their knees and watch his resurrection.
And why does Jesus show up when the guy's watching porn?
Dude,
why
that, doesn't he, I don't even know.
Why
I don't
doesn't
care about
he
that.
Wait until the guy's jerking
care.
Off?
I don't care
That's
about
what
that.
What I want to know.
It's so fucking disturbing listening to that.
Isn't
that
it?
That is freaking me out.
Why?
It
hits too close to home?
No, because, you know, they do this little acting thing for the God tube. Hey, this is a play. We're going to do this play, and you're going to play Jesus, and I'm going to play this crying freak job.
Watches porn.
Watches porn on the internet. So what?
Do you think the director said, you know what would make this more powerful is if you were actually jerking off when Jesus showed up? You think that they had that conversation?
Man.
But then Jesus, if you watch this video, Jesus has the crown of thorns. He's got the wounds in his hands in the white robes.
Can he whistle through them?
No, it looked like magic marker to me.
Oh, man.
So the moral of the story is, hey, everybody sins. Look at my voice is breaking again.
Yeah, everybody sins.
Everybody sins. So just tell me what it is you're doing, and everything's okay. Do whatever you want.
Yeah. Just tell me about
it. Just tell
it,
me about it.
It's all good.
Because I get off on that. Yeah, it's kind of creepy. Kind of goddamn
it
creepy.
It is, man. It's weird. It's a weird ass whatever.
That is weird ass.
Whatever it is. I don't know what it is.
It's weird ass is what it is.
It's weird.
And somebody actually films it and records it and they edit it. Yeah. And they're not creeped out by that. That's creepy.
It is, man. Oof.
I think we should start doing some spoof videos.
Take
it a step further, you know?
No doubt.
You play Jesus. I'll be the guy jerking off the porn.
Why do I
got to
play
porn?
Jesus?
Because you don't fit the stereotypical Jesus model. You know what I'm saying?
Ah, right. What are you saying? How do you know Jesus wasn't fat?
From what I understand, he was black.
Oh.
And he was a very thin man. He's just son
right.
of God, John. Son of God.
Right, right.
Right on. All right, moving on. Quick story about school. You know, I signed up for the Big Bang and something class, right?
Yeah.
Turns out it's a history of cosmology class.
And that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Cosmology.
Cosmology, which is another word for physics. So anyway, I go to class, and there's an assignment every week. My assumption is the teacher is going to post the question on the blackboard, you know, because it's an internet's class. It's I have to go to school, but there's a lot of stuff that happens on the internet.
Right.
And then I come to find out, no, he's not going to. I thought I was going to have to write like an essay every week, right? Then I find out, no, the assignment is all I have to do is ask a question and post it on the internet. That's it. That's my assignment. So I'm thinking, what kind of a effing degree am I getting here? This is what I have to do to pass the class? I just have to post a question? That's it? And then I got two take-home exams, right? They only have to be 2 pages long. And then I have a final presentation, which is a 5-minute, whatever I want it to be. It could be a PowerPoint or whatever. And I'm thinking, what, this is college?
Yeah.
Come on.
That's fucked up.
It is fucked up. So I'll give you an update after my class on Monday. I went to my first class. Everything seemed cool. My assumption was I'd be turning in an essay every week. And now I don't even have to do that. I just have to ask a question every week. That's it.
Yeah, but what are you trying to get to? What's your goal?
A bachelor's degree, John.
In what?
My goal is a bachelor's degree. Well, it's a bachelor's in liberal arts with a focus in whatever I want it to be in.
Ah.
So that could be a focus in the history of science. I'm leaning towards the history of physics is my focus area, John.
Focus.
Right on. So then I'll be able to get a master's in physics if I want to. See what I'm saying?
Right.
Right on. So, yeah, I'm a little bit disappointed in the curriculum. This is a school of higher education is my assumption.
Yeah.
But to pass, I just have to ask a question. I don't have to answer it. I just have to ask it.
Exit.
That seems kind of stupid
question.
To me. All right, John, moving on. podcasts. Let's talk a little bit about podcasts. I listen to podcasts in bulk, you know.
Yeah.
I go through 5 or 10 at a time. I'm in the middle of a mediocre bulk. And I got to tell you, that is one of the best shows on the internets, in my opinion, John.
Really?
Now, the mediocre show does a mediocre confession. They have people call in and confess things.
Yeah.
Like, for example, some guy called in and confessed that he jerked off in his mother-in-law's underwear.
Oh, that's fucked up. For real?
For real. I don't know if it really happened. Who knows if it really happened,
right,
but that's
right.
What he said would happen. But the thing that I don't understand is Matt got all bent out of shape that this happened. He couldn't understand it. But Matt is the guy, if you remember, John, who cummed on another guy's head.
Yeah.
So you tell me. Coming in your mother-in-law's underwear or coming on a sleeping man's head? Which one would you do, you know?
Well, it's another man. It's okay. To spread your mayonnaise.
Anyway, here's my confession. I confess that I love this goddamn show, and it's 10 times better without Taylor. All right? Somebody needs to say that, and I'm going to say it. That show is fucking great. And if Taylor was still on, I'd still be listening. I'd still be a fan. But I would, you know, mediocre show. It's
mediocre.
You know, it's mediocre. It is the great mediocre show, John.
Yeah.
And I am the nation,
John. Told you, man. I turned you on to that show.
You did turn me on to that show. It's fucking great.
I
love it.
It's a good show. It's a good show.
What else? Oh, I had an idea. But again, I don't have time. We really need to get an intern. How do we do this? How do we get an intern?
What happened to Erica?
Why can't we go to like the Columbia College, right?
Yeah.
And say, hey, we're a podcast. We need a goddamn intern. We'll grade this MF-er. Just give us somebody who can do assignments for us, and we'll tell you how
well they
do it. Here's my idea, John. This would be similar to a Shit or Shinola. It only happened if we had guests. And the guests, most of our guests, some listen, some don't listen to podcasts. But these guests, if we had them, could not listen to the Smodcast. Or maybe they could, I don't know. But my idea for a game is called the Scott Mosier game. And I would take clips from Smodcast, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, whatever, 10 seconds, play the clip, and then the guests would have to guess what Scott Mosier is talking about. Because that guy, sometimes he's right on the money, and sometimes he can talk
like,
for fucking 30 minutes, and I still don't know what he's talking about. The Scott Mosier game.
Scott Mosier.
So I'm going to try to get that together
Mosier.
For one of the next shows. All right, John, let's move on. Let's go ahead and give my wife a call.
Oh.
If we have that capability. Do we have that capability?
Of course.
It's 10 to 10. I'm sorry, it's 20 to 10 in the evening. She should still be up. She did have a topic she wanted to talk to you about, but I'd like to bring her on to talk about a movie that we both saw, 310 to Yuma, which I don't think you have seen yet. But I want to bring her in for that discussion and to talk about what she brought up to me. It's kind of a long story, but I don't know. I should probably tell you so it's not an ambush.
All right.
Right? But she's going to ask you why you frost your hair. So be prepared. Okay?
Oh. It's real simple.
All right.
All right.
Don't tell me. Tell
all
her.
Right. All right.
That's
we're
Skype.
Dialing.
We're dialing. We're dialing the landline.
I hope this works.
Of course, I can hear the phone ringing. So
yeah.
My assumption is when she picks up, I will hear her voice.
You will, but will she hear us?
Yeah, but will
Hello?
She answer?
Hello?
There she is.
Hello?
All right, well, basically, we called my lovely wife, first of all, to talk about 310 to Yuma.
Yeah.
Because we both saw that last night. Was that last night?
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and start. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't understand why this movie's getting all this praise.
Right.
Oh, is that better?
Much better.
Okay.
When you talk about a movie, you talk about cinematography, editing, casting, acting, all those things I thought were top notch. But some of the things in the story just did not make sense. Are you familiar with this movie, John? 310 to Yuma?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen 310?
I've heard of it, though.
Yeah, it's with Christian Bale.
Yeah.
And what's the other guy's name? Guy from Australia?
Oh, you know who was in it, Scott? Was Peter Fonda.
Oh, Peter Fonda was in it, yeah.
And Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe, that's the guy. So what it is, it's a small-time rancher that's Christian Bale, agrees to hold Russell Crowe, this captured outlaw who's awaiting a train to go to Yuma. He's got to go to court. And what it is this Russell Crowe character is like the Hannibal Lecter of...
Right.
The Old West. I mean, this guy, he's smart, and he is ruthless. Ruthless. And there's a couple of things that I didn't understand about the movie, and we talked about this. For example, Christian Bale at one point is in a position that Russell Crowe has to be at his house. This is after they capture him. This is after he's murdered. Two people in cold blood.
Murdered.
And this is a list of 24 people. I mean, a lot of people this guy has killed. For whatever reason, Russell Crowe has to have him at his house. And that's fine. I understand that. But he invites...
Christian Bale. Had him at his house, yeah.
But he invites him to dinner.
With his lovely wife and young children.
Right. So this murderer, this Hannibal Lecter, is sitting at a table... Eating dinner with his family.
Well, maybe he's just misunderstood. That's all.
Well, no.
Was that the protocol back in the Old West? I don't know.
I think it was. They were Christian Bale's family was a God fearing. He was portraying the best character, and his wife, and he was trying to raise his children. These were a family. Representing the best qualities and attributes of kindness, compassion, you know, all these great things. And they were just trying to be hospitable. It probably was the custom at the time. And you're not mentioning that. It's not like Ben Wayne.
Yeah, you non-believer.
That was the name of the character. But you're not mentioning that there were also like five other guys there. Each of them was...
Well, wait a minute. There were five other guys there. And one thing about Russell Crowe's character, Ben Wade.
Wade.
He was an atheist. I got the impression that he was an atheist. I mean, he knew scripture.
Ben Wade.
But I don't think he believed in God. But there was
Right, he didn't. That's right. I mean, there's a whole punchline, the story about how he developed his sociopathic behaviors is rooted in a childhood incident.
Right on.
His father died and has to do with his association with the Bible.
We don't want to give out spoilers here.
Okay, all right.
So
it's on DVD.
I'm kidding.
The whole point is, this is the crappiest movie you could have seen, and it got all this press. And Scott's taken half an hour to tell us it's a crappy movie.
Here's the deal. So you said that there were five other guys at the table, but at one point, everybody in the room left to go outside and left this Hannibal Lecter character alone with Christian Bale's wife.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
Well, what happened?
Nothing really happened. They just had a conversation.
They tied him up and tossed him in a corner. Problem solved. Leave it to the women. They take care of it.
Well, they did take care of it. And then later on in the story, there's this guy, and you can tell the guy's going to get it. You know, you can tell he's going to die because he's kind of an asshole, right? And Ben...
And he's provoking the sociopath.
Yeah, he's provoking Ben Wade. And Ben Wade, in the middle of the night... takes this guy out. It's brutal. It the way he does it, he takes him out.
Now, that's not a spoiler. Why are you...
I was kidding.
What are you...
That's like the best part of the whole movie.
I was kidding about the spoilers. We always spoil movies. So, the thing
you
is...
You know how Scott is with his Machiavellian
The other thing
ways.
I could not get over is they handcuffed him in the front, so his hands were in the front. And even after this, he brutally killed this guy in the middle of the night. They still handcuffed him in the front.
That's how they did it back then, Scott.
Right.
That way they can put the rope.
Society hadn't advanced.
Right.
They hadn't figured out yet that if they put the hands behind the back.
No. It has to do with putting the rope around the hands and dragging them by a horse.
Oh, well, these were handcuffs. They were metal.
Yeah, and the second half of the movie, half of their problems would have been solved if they handcuffed him in the back.
Yeah.
Half of their problems.
But then there'd be no movie.
Yeah, I guess there would be no movie.
What irritated me is that Scott had to talk through this whole...
I had to pause it.
Tell me about it.
He had to lecture about why, what the inconsistency...
Well, here's the thing that irritated me.
That's why I can't go see movies with him anymore.
Here's the thing that irritated me.
Oh, look at this. Oh.
To pause it, I had to, like, get up because the remote where I sit didn't... reach the DVD, so I had to actually get up and move to pause it and then talk about it, which you weren't interested in it at all.
If you were, get on with it.
Here's the deal. I spend my life with you.
I'm sorry?
Watching movies that are unbelievable. I mean, I can't believe 2 cents were paid to make these movies.
Like Superbad.
We watch.
Is what you're talking about, right? Superbad?
Like
Superbad is the greatest movie ever.
Oh. My God. Anyway, and I have to sit through these things, and I'll say, like, what is this piece of crap? How did this thing get made? Who watches this garbage? And Scott's like, hey, it's a movie. You got to suspend reality. It's all about the suspension of reality. So then we watch a movie that he's not into, and he's criticizing it because he's got to suspend reality for a few moments.
I understand. When I say suspend reality, that's within context, okay? So... there's a certain set of rules that apply, but the movie sets those rules up. So if the movie sets the rules up,
Don, can you imagine living?
This is realistic. I expect realism. All right. So the very end is what I need to watch it again, because what happens is this guy gets Ben Wade all the way to the train, and Ben Wade, here's spoilers, turns on his own men. To try to protect this guy, which I do not understand at all.
Oh, God, because the guy started off in life as a normal good person as a child. His father was murdered or killed. I can't remember the deal, but the father ends up dead. The boy is 8. The mother is clearly has a nervous breakdown. She drops her son off at a train station, tells him to read the Bible while she goes to buy the tickets. 3 days go by. He reads the thing cover to cover a couple of times, realizes his mother's never coming back. He's 8. So who knows what happens to this kid after that? He's been abandoned by both parents effectively, and he's out in these horrible places. So he develops this life of
crime,
of
hatred.
Of crime, okay?
Hatred.
And he develops these sociopathic behaviors. But his relationship with Christian Bale, Dan, they, what happens as they go through their compressed, you know, it's just a couple of days, right, a day and a half or so, and all these crazy events happen, all these stressful life-endangering moments, and he learns a lot about Dan. He tries to push his buttons. He succeeds a couple of times, but his whole MO, he's learned how to provoke people, how to find their weaknesses so that he can
exploit it,
emotionally torture and exploit them and then murder them. Well, bottom line, by the end of this movie, he learns about Dan's own internal weakness, and it gives him insight into the guy's character. And he determines in his mind, he sees in Dan the goodness that does exist in people and in life.
Yeah.
And it makes him question himself, question his own morality and kind of where he's gone with his life. And then when his own right-hand man, who has saved his life repeatedly, murders Dan right in front of him with like 10 gunshots, he realizes how disgusted he is with who he's become and the people around him.
I guess I don't buy it because
why
I'm
not?
Cynical.
He's Darth Vader.
I'm cynical.
He's Darth Vader. And he instead he sees Luke getting zapped, and then he turns on the Emperor, picks him up, and throws him down the shaft.
Yeah, but Luke was blood. Okay, Dan was somebody he met 2 days ago. And
it doesn't matter. It's a crisis of character.
I understand. But he's running with this gang of 7 or 8 guys for how many years? Who knows how many years? He doesn't get any insight into them, or he does,
you
and
think
he just...
He doesn't care about them. He doesn't respect them because they are characters that he controls, he manipulates. Dan was given choices that any of his men would have taken in a moment, but the guy chose to do the right thing, and he's fascinated by this. And he realizes this is a person completely different than all these other losers. He said that himself. They're all losers, whatever his word was. So he knows this.
You know what? I was going to give this movie a bad review, but after discussing this with my wife, I'm going to give it 3.5 stars.
Why?
3.5 Spiny Normans. You've convinced me.
I said yesterday, the only reason people must be raving about the movie is every movie out at the time must have been crappy.
No, why do you think it's crappy? Now that you've explained it to me, I understand his reaction. But the what I was going to say before is the best parts of the movie are when Dan and Russell Crowe are sharing insight into each other.
Right.
Those are the best parts of the movie.
Well, I agree. So somehow you were so irritated by these minor things in the story that I guess the larger theme.
Yeah,
were,
and there's no reeling him back once that happens.
Right, once he gets
it's over.
Down that rat hole. That's
so,
right.
So to you, I think now I'm seeing it as a better movie, and I want to see it again. But why are you giving it a thumbs down?
To me, the photography was beautiful. I that was something I was really impressed with. I thought the cinematography, the setup, everything I thought was done visually really well. I thought that the story was parochial. I thought it was told so in such an obvious way that even though apparently it was lost on my beloved husband, to me it was so simplistic. I just thought, oh my God, you know, in the first 10 minutes we could have done this through start to finish, you know.
See, John, this is what happens when you marry up, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh.
When you marry out of your league.
Well, that's why I don't watch movies with my wife. My wife can sit there, and the thing about my wife, she can read like 15 books in a day. I mean, she can brush teeth, bake stuff, do laundry, and read books. I can't read a page if I hear a single noise, a coin drop, anything. My attention span is, I have an attention span of a gnat. My wife, you know, super smart. My daughter totally takes after my wife, my son, me. So, yeah, I mean, that's why we don't watch movies together so much, because I watch the very sophomoric, retarded comedy stuff, slapstick, which she doesn't get. Like, what was that, Blades of Glory? Special Ed and I were laughing our ass off. Our wives, what? You think this is funny? Yeah, this is great. Well, the head coming off, that's hilarious.
I talked about Superbad where you lasted, please, what, 20, 25 minutes, and then you fell asleep and then decided
opening
to go upstairs?
Credits are crap.
It's the greatest movie ever.
Oh, my God.
I'm on my wife's side there. I think it's crap, that one.
Yeah, but you cross your legs,
but
funny
John,
now.
He did
so
mention,
I don't.
John did mention to me, you need to watch that movie with me. Which, since we did buy it, Superbad, he said, you need to watch that movie with me. Right, because I was watching it with you, you had certain expectations of how I would react or behave when watching the movie. Therefore, I like edited myself and it put a cap on my enjoyment.
Well, my memory of our movie viewing experience that night is that I'm pretty sure I got up and left the room and... you stayed down here for quite a while. So
well,
you were alone.
I would have left. If it was a Netflix movie, I would have left the room as well. But since I bought the movie, I figure I might as well watch the whole thing.
It stresses me no end.
Well, if you want to give it to me, home. Yeah. It really
All right, now the other thing I wanted to talk about is our daughter had... Oh, my voice is cracking again. Our daughter had a holiday sing. So we went to the holiday sing. We sit and I had identified our neighbor, Scott, in the crowd.
Oh, here we go.
And so we're watching this.
That's exactly what I say usually when I know what the story's going to be. Here we go.
So Marsha is finally, she recognizes our neighbor.
But, the lovely Mrs. Scott?
Right. The lovely Mrs. Scott recognizes the neighbor, but she is appalled, disgusted,
horrified
that our neighbor Scott has highlights in his hair. And she says to me, "What is with the highlights? That is so gay."
Now, wait a minute. Come on.
Come on.
Didn't
you say that?
I don't mean it literally. I just mean that.
It's not
horrified.
Something manly. That
not,
some
right.
Right. And I said, what's the big deal with highlights? Rick and John get highlights.
Yeah, yeah.
To which her jaw hit the goddamn floor.
What?
She
I
couldn't
can't
believe
think of me the same way anymore.
That you highlight
yeah,
your hair.
I do. Here's why. My hair is so thin, you could see my scalp through it. And the darker my hair is, the more scalp you can see. So, yeah, I guess it's a middle age thing, maybe, because I'm
right?
43.
Yeah, that would have never occurred to me.
So I get it lightened a little bit. Now, a couple of times she's kept the foils in a little too long, and it gets really, like, scalp. What's with the frosting? I like the frosting in your hair.
Well,
so,
just hearing you say that, it keeps the foils in too long. I mean,
yeah.
That still well, doesn't, does my, not, it still doesn't
then,
mitigate the vision that we have
for me.
Of you with tinfoil in your hair.
What do I care what you think?
It's just crazy to me that you have these foils put in your hair. And you
my wife loves it. She loves it. She thinks it's sexy.
Oh, my God.
Some of
that
the girls
so
at work,
not.
Too.
How's the guy? How do
yeah,
you
but I'm not married to you.
To do it?
I'm not married
to you.
No,
I know. I'm just, it's a concept here. I don't get it.
I mean Scott should get some highlights.
Scott shaves his head.
Oh, that's right.
He has hair issues. He doesn't like hair.
Yeah, I don't like hair.
He doesn't like hair. I have to fight him and keep him away from our son because he tries to shave his head.
Oh,
The guy's three.
Your son's got a beautiful head of hair. Why would you do that?
I'm just trying to prepare him because it's
young,
probably
handsome,
you know,
blonde,
it's genetic.
Man.
It's probably going to fall out at 18. It's going to freak him out.
No, it's usually
so if I
on,
keep
the,
him bald
on the
up to then,
woman's side.
It's not going to fall out because I'm not going to let him douse his head with sun in every day.
Oh, is that what Scott, what Scott used to do?
I don't know
yeah.
how
oh,
this rumor
okay,
got started.
Okay, so highlights are gay,
swimming.
But sun in, which
no,
is a form of
too.
Highlighting.
That's not acceptable either. I'm with you on that, John. Yeah.
Here's the difference. How old are you now, John?
43.
I did it when I was 16. Okay.
Yeah.
Cut me some slack.
I have
for
highlights
being an
in
adolescent.
My hair right now. You wouldn't even know.
Oh, I
you
know.
You can't even tell.
I can tell.
What are you? What are you gay? You observe my hair that closely?
See, I would have never guessed, John, that you were Rick
see?
Adam. I mean, our neighbor.
You've never seen
hair.
My. You've never noticed mine. Yeah, one time. It, like, got out of control, and it was really like, oh, Jesus.
Well, so that's the thing. Like, I would never know if Scott hadn't told me. But
it has to do with my thinning hair, basically.
Yeah. Well, our neighbor, he has a full head of hair, and his hair is normally, like, a dark.
It's very
really
thick.
Blonde. And it's jacked up, like, white blonde now. It looks, I don't get it.
Is he punk? Is he a punker?
He is a rocker. Yeah. I've invited him over, yeah. but he's not been able to make it. He might be out there January 19th, Beacon Tap.
He's a
John.
Really great guy. It just surprised me, that's all. It never even occurred to me that a person not in show business, a guy, would be. And honestly, it didn't.
Lots of guys do it. Rick does it. Marty used to do it. Marty, he's got, like, black hair, and then he blonded his tips. And
then he went to the recruiter
to join up in the armed forces, and
oh.
they told him, yeah, you got to cut those things off.
Oh yeah.
Or you're going to be doing bendovers. Yeah. So, you know, it's for me, it's just basically covered up my thinning. You know, you could see my white scalp right through my hair.
Why don't you just shave it?
I got a bad head for that. Scott's got a nice head for shaving.
Oh, thank
I got
you,
like a pack of dogs in the back of my
All right,
head.
Jack,
looks like a pack cool. of hot dogs. So it doesn't look good. Otherwise, I would. Mm. Yeah, that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
All right, then.
All right.
You got anything else you want to contribute there? Anything you want to discuss?
Didn't we see some other movie that was...
What's this shit about a bromance?
Oh, yeah.
All right, yeah. Let me start the story. So anyway, I'm shopping, grocery shopping.
Grocery shopping?
And I see a People magazine. What was it, People magazine?
I don't know what it was, or Us. Or
Cosmo?
My wife is totally into Laguna Beach and the hills. These MTV reality shows, right?
Oh, jeez.
I'm totally embarrassed, but I am.
So
How dare you talk about my tips?
I know.
I think I'll do something nice because on the cover is the season preview of what's going to come up on the hills or some shit like that. So I pick up this magazine for my wife. She opens it up to look at the hills. The first page she turns to is... Bromance. Hollywood bromances. And you will not believe the amount of shit I get for...
What do you mean? I just call you, and if she's anywhere near the phone, I can...
Right.
Oh.
Well, not only that, but you are my girlfriend.
Yeah.
Even my daughter.
I disagree.
Even my daughter. If
you're
you call
mine.
And talk to my daughter, and then I get the message from her, my daughter, my 10-year-old daughter says... Your girlfriend called. John, your girlfriend called.
John or Dad?
She
John.
Said, Daddy,
oh,
your girlfriend
oh.
called.
Daddy, John, your girlfriend called
she
you.
She doesn't say John. She just says, Daddy, your girlfriend called. And you go running for the phone.
I do go running for the phone.
And you beeline to the back porch so that you can go outside so we don't hear your little conversation.
That's only because I'm very attentive, because if I do not call John back, he gets very upset. That's the only
what?
Reason.
What?
Because you two are deeply in love.
It's not about love or
Don't even deny it. It's not worth it.
I'm denying it. My wife.
What kind of love?
Makes assumptions. She makes implications.
There's
that
no sex.
You and I have sex.
Oh.
You think, I never said that. I do think you have a crush on John. I think if you don't have
wait a minute.
John,
no,
like
no. Crushes last what, a year? I've known John for 15 years. How is that a crush?
You got to give Scott some rope here. If I'm the best he can get, I mean, come on.
It has nothing to do with whether you're quote unquote the best or not. It's how he feels about you, and he is whipped.
Whipped. Do you believe that? Whipped.
No, it's not true.
That is not true.
No.
Oh, please.
He's so passive aggressive, it's brutal.
Like how? What do you mean?
It's like a marriage. He's how can I it's hard to put into words, because passive aggression is so difficult to describe. You know when it's happening, like especially when you got like an employee that's just brutal. There's no way you can discipline this person because they're constantly coming on like, what's the thing he used to say to you? I offer you nothing but understanding. And you know that's total sarcasm.
Oh, yeah, and it makes you crazy. You want to pull his eyeballs out. Step on him.
He pulls that shit on me all the time.
Yeah, he does with me, too. That's how I know.
What does that mean?
How he feels about it.
I don't know what that means. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to get clarification. So
yeah,
that
there we go.
And I'm sure that we're on the same playing field. That's all.
I don't know why you're getting so upset. I'm just clarifying. I'm trying to clarify.
Isn't that totally how it is? Yep.
Yeah, so, yeah, I know.
It makes you crazy.
Yeah, it hurts. Hurts me.
I can tell when he hasn't had enough time with you, because then more of that crap comes my way.
So it's a good thing that I get out two nights a week, once for practice.
I think what it is an outlet of the sophomoric, whatever it is, there's some sort of, within males, this need for, to express our childish sophomoric humor or whatever it is. I don't think that ever goes away in men, ever.
Right. For ever. Sure it doesn't. Yeah.
And, you know, as far as wives, we hold them really high on a pedestal. And sometimes
right on,
it's
John.
Embarrassing to actually admit that we go that direction. In
what
the,
are you saying? You go what direction?
Well, you know, that sophomoric, very, you know, We try to tap into our youth,
our youth,
fart and dick jokes and all that crap. And my wife, ever since we had kids, that kind of humor is, which she thought was endearing at one time. I get the eye roll constantly. Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's funny. Uh-huh. Yeah. Although if she's been drinking a little, yeah, then it's real funny. But other than that, yeah, that's just a bunch of eye rolls. So it's more entertainment for my kids. Actually, my son, my daughter now is becoming a lot like my wife. They both have this look that they give me. If I do a loud belch and then I imitate Will Ferrell in Elf. Did you hear that? My son will crack up. Then the both of them will, my wife and daughter just kind of look at me.
So it's a gender. It's a gender
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, definitely. So spending time with Scott lets that kind of outlet that I need to have with any of my buds, you know.
So what you're saying, John, is it's a requirement for a healthy marriage.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Matter of fact, my wife had sent something to me the other day. You need to go out. Call Scott or something. Go, just get out.
Well, she's been pushing you to go out with special ed, right?
Yeah, special ed.
Well, if I lived with you, I'd be telling you to go out every day. I don't blame her.
See, I knew it. I told you, Scott. I've gone below Steve now.
No.
I'm below Mr. Schmuel.
No way.
No, John.
I don't think that's possible.
There's garbage, Mr. Schmuel, than me.
No. Mm-mm. John, you know I love you. Come on, I'm just kidding.
I know. I'm just, I know.
No way. Mm-mm. No one's cool, Steve.
Oh, man. Poor Steve.
All right, honey, you got any
closing
thoughts?
What's with that lamp? I've never seen a lamp like that before. Oh, that's ugly. What's that?
We don't need to.
Oh, we move into our new house, and he's like, that sink. I don't think that sink goes in here, really.
Oh, are you serious? That's the most beautiful kitchen I've ever seen in my life.
Well, he stood there. Scott, were you here for that?
What's that old farm kitchen sink you got there? That's...
Yeah, you like that?
Dan didn't do anything special with your landscaping there.
I know. After we spent an arm and a leg landscaping. Yeah, there's nothing special.
That's nothing special there.
It's just some bushes and grass.
And here's a guy who, when we tore down our old house, was there digging out shrubs that we had at our old house. But the new shrubs aren't, you know.
What a freak.
Yeah, that's nothing too great there. I like a lot of color, you know.
I'm just kidding. He's not a freak. He's just eccentric.
Yeah.
Steve's the one who my daughter loves to always ask, Mommy, what were the stories when you were little with Steve? What did he do? What did, you know, how did you get to know him?
And Mr. Schmuel, we referred to him as.
Well, oh.
Steve Schmuel, whatever.
Well, I can't call him that.
It's disrespectful, right?
Oh, no, it's not about that. It just, I don't like it. So, what am I trying to say here? Oh, yeah, so I would tell her, well, we all used to go on the bus together to day camp. You know, we were like in first grade.
I used to, too. And how?
And how?
And we picked up the bus at the corner of, you know, that one corner there.
Yeah,
by our school. And, I said, Uncle Mike and I would get on the bus, and Steve and his sister, a couple of them, would be there. And he would torment us and call us names. Our last name at the time was, and he would call us Egghead. And he'd just call me Egghead all day long. And so I got home one time, and finally my dad's like, what is wrong with you two? And we're like, well, this guy just keeps making fun of our name. And he's like, well, what's this kid's name? And we say, and he goes,
bonk.
Wait a minute. He goes, wait a minute. A person with that name's making fun of you?
Of course, because this has been made fun of so much.
Yeah.
That finally.
I don't know. So, anyway.
Oh, that's wild. Yeah, I've known him since I was the same age.
Second grade.
Yeah.
All on the bus together? Is that the deal?
Probably.
I don't remember.
You remember fishing with the bamboo poles and the hot dog?
Yeah. With hot dogs.
Piece of hot dog, see?
Yeah.
The big ice cream eating contest at the end of the year. The sherbet.
It was so much fun. I remember the snow cones.
Snow cones. 10 cents.
Yeah. I was there.
I don't remember, John.
You do not.
I don't. I was big man on campus. I went all four sessions.
Kid.
All four. I was there the whole summer.
Wow. Was TP there?
No.
Oh, I
TP
thought I
was
remembered
not
a
there.
Kid there. I can't remember. Some kid brought he caught fish, and then we had a field trip or maybe the bus going back, and he had... put the fish in his lunch bag in the bus, and it's reeked so bad because it's so hot. Remember the summers were so hot?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, dude, what's in the bag, man? What's in the bag, Dad?
Dude,
and
man.
He opens it up, and there's a couple of bluegills there. I'm like, oh, my God, dude.
Yeah. I once carried a dead cat with me all the way. In my backpack all the way to school. Have you ever heard the story?
No.
So my mom and dad, you know, my dad worked midnights and my mom had to leave the house at 5 in the morning. So she always hired some mom in the neighborhood and she would drop us off at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then we stayed with this family that lived over by, I can't remember the name of the park, West Park, whatever, somewhere over there. So, we're walking to school one day, and it was there were three boys. One was my brother and two other boys and me, and we're walking along. It's winter, freezing cold. And there's a pile of bushes by the curb, and in there I see a cat. I was in second grade, I think. And I go over, I see this cat, and I'm like, oh, the poor kitty, it's so cold. Oh, I pick it up, I put it in my book bag. I don't think we had backpacks back then, but I pick it up, I put it in my bag, and I walk to school. I get to school. I didn't know what teacher to talk to. The only one I trusted was Mrs. Cook. She was the kindergarten teacher. So I went to her, and I said, hey, Mrs. Cook, I found this cat. I think it needs a home. It doesn't have a collar. I know my parents will let me take care of the cat. What should I do with it all day? And she says, well, show me the cat. So I open my bag. She looks in there. This thing's frozen solid. It's like a pizza. Like it's pulled out of the freezer where if you dropped it on the ground, it would wobble, you know, rattle.
Or crack an ass.
Yeah, exactly. She says, huh, let me call Janitor Joe. So a couple minutes later, Janitor Joe comes over. They whisper. And he says, you know what, I'm going to take this cat for you. Come back after school to this room, and I'll get you the cat, and you can take it home. And I'm sure they're both snickering about this. So yeah. He takes the cat, he puts it in the freezer, apparently unbeknownst to me, or just outside. And after school I go, I pick it up, I go to Brownies at the church, because it's brownie night, with the cat in my bag.
They gave you the frickin' dead cat again?
They gave it back to you?
That's what I don't understand. Oh, why wouldn't they just say, hey, we found a home for the cat?
Public schools.
Yeah.
I think they were laughing about it, thinking they probably didn't like my parents or something, or my brother. And they, let's get back.
Did they warm it up or did they keep it frozen?
No, it was frozen.
Still frozen.
So I pick up the cat. I walk to the church. I go to my Brownies thing. So like school's over at 3:30. Then I walk home. I don't get home until 5 o'clock. Everyone's sitting at the dinner table. I walked in. Oh, Mom, I've got this cat. Da, da, da. My grandma's there. We live with her. I reach in my bag. I pull out the cat. My mother screamed at the top of her lungs. No joke. And my grandma just said, oh, oh. My dad says, wow, no, this is interesting. Where'd you find this cat? And starts asking me questions, and he tries to explain to me that the cat's dead, and I guess I didn't really, I had no concept.
Yeah,
I didn't
understand
it at all. So he took the cat, and he showed me in the backyard. He pretty much tossed it like a Frisbee, and he's like, see, if it were alive.
Let's
you know?
See it land on its feet.
Yeah, if it were alive, it would have landed on its feet.
Yeah, its tail would move, its feet would move, but it was, he just launched it, and that was pretty much it.
So was it buried in the backyard somewhere, or what happened
to it? Well, it was in the middle. He told me that. He's like, well, Marcia, I can't dig a hole. The ground's frozen. You know how cold it used to get.
Right.
So I don't know if he just threw it back there or if he threw it in the guy. I don't know what he did.
Wow.
But that's a good family lore.
I don't understand is the school taking it and then giving it back to you. Oh, here you go. You know what? Take it to show and tell.
If that happened today, that would make the front page of
Oh,
day,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, no doubt.
School gives dead cat back to the pupil.
That's the greatest story ever, man. I don't think I have one like that from my childhood.
Yeah, that's a pretty good one. All right, well, that's it. I gotta go.
All right, thanks, honey.
All right, thanks for joining TTN, Mrs.
All right,
Scott.
Keep your hands to yourselves, guys.
Of course.
Oh, yeah, always.
All right, see ya.
All right, bye.
Good thing she didn't say anything about genitals. All right.
Right.
Now, John, I think it's time to play another TTN practice song because I really have a bladder problem going on over here.
Oh, come on, old man.
Come on, man. I need to go. We got celebrity science, and we'll get into politics and news.
All right.
Jenny, who can I turn to? something I can hold on to. I know you think I'm like the others before, who saw your name and number on the wall. Jenny, I got your number, I need to make you mine. Jenny, don't change your number.
8675309.
Jenny, Jenny, you're the girl for me. You don't know me, but you make me so happy. I tried to call you before, but I lost my nerve. I tried my imagination, but I was disturbed.
All right, yeah. Wow.
You made it, man. Wow. You made it. We both had potty breaks during that song. Out of sight.
Wow.
Out of sight, John.
Yeah, no doubt.
I got to adjust my mic. Hold on. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. What'd you do?
I don't know. Maybe I'm sitting in differently. All right, John. Let's turn to celebrity news. Now, we talked about Jerry Seinfeld before on the show, John.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's the luckiest guy on the planet.
You think so? Oh, yeah, yeah, right. Because of his success.
Success. Right on. And we played some clips in one of our podcasts. He went and attacked this woman who happened to write a book that his Yenta wife wrote the same damn subject. But it was 6 months after this other woman. And according to Jerry Seinfeld, she was one of these woodwork wackos, John. A woodwork wacko. Anyway, this woodwork wacko filed a lawsuit against Jerry Seinfeld's wife, Jessica, on Monday. The suit alleges that Jessica brazenly plagiarized from a cookbook, The Sneaky Chef, for Seinfeld's own collection of recipes for kids' healthy eats. Both Jerry and his wife have on multiple occasions publicly dismissed claims that Jessica's book was plagiarized. But that doesn't cut it in a court of law, Mr. Seinfeld. He's also been named as a defendant in the lawsuit, accused of defamation.
Oh, yeah.
And that's for all the shit he said about her being a whack job.
On the Letterman show, right?
What a dumbass.
Yeah.
And what a stupid.
And he's gonna lose.
He's gonna lose.
He's gonna lose because he's a very because of his success, he's a very prominent celebrity. And coming on the Letterman show, which he didn't have to do that. I mean, why do that?
I lost all respect for him.
What the fuck? Why do you need to do something
when
like
he
that?
Did that?
I mean,
well, who knows what kind of marriage he has? Maybe his wife. You have to go on Letterman and say this woman is crazy because I came up with this idea. If you don't, it means you don't love me. Who knows? Maybe he's pussy whipped. I don't know.
Jerry fucktard.
Whatever reason, he's an a-hole. And he's got to pay the piper now, John. Pay the piper.
Pay the piper.
That's right.
No, I agree.
Another disgusting celebrity news. I don't know if you've heard this. Terry Irwin. Do you know who that is? Terry Irwin?
No.
Has had contact with late husband Steve, the crocodile hunter.
Oh, right.
Irwin.
Australia, what?
Get this. Australian media is reporting that Terry had a private session with psychic John Edwards.
Oh, no.
And that Steve's presence was felt.
Oh, jeez.
There was a definite, unmistakable Steve energy, says Bob Irwin, Steve's father, who was at the private session with the psychic.
That's despicable.
It is despicable. This is somebody that...
And how much money did this cocksucker take?
Right. Maybe he didn't do it for any money, knowing
that publicity.
They would talk about it. Who knows? But it's so goddamn despicable that these people consider him a friend. This John Edwards a friend. And he's going to mislead them into thinking that he can really talk
fucking
to a
snake
fucking
oil.
Dead person.
Snake oil salesman.
It's fucking disgusting to me, John. It disgusts me.
Disgusting.
These psychics.
Psychics.
Like a friend, yeah. I'm a real friend. And if he charged them, if he charged them...
You
motherfucker. Fucking A, man.
You motherfucker.
No doubt.
You motherfucker.
That's what Terry Irwin's going to be saying after she listens to our show and finds out what
That's
a fraud
right.
this guy is. She's going to say what, John?
Oh.
She's going to say...
You motherfucker.
Yeah, that's
I think she's going to say this.
In our urethras, we have a little teeny tiny vagina. That anus.
In other celebrity news, we're going to segue into Scientology celebrity news, John. This is really, and it's all disturbing celebrity news this week. It's all disturbing. In what would probably represent the cheapest rap gift in Hollywood history, Will Smith reportedly offered the crew of the inevitable 2008 summer blockbuster Hancock a coupon. Do you know what the coupon was for, John?
No.
For a free personality test at the Scientology E-Meter outlet store.
Wait a minute. Will Smith's a freaking
of the recipient's choice. That's right.
Oh, no.
Will Smith has been hanging out with Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise brainwashed Will Smith into Scientology. I'm starting to lose respect for Will Smith.
How could such a low gray matter waste of life be able to brainwash a Will Smith?
I have no idea. Will Smith is a very talented, I think he's more talented than Tom Cruise, if you ask me.
Oh, way more.
And you would think from the talent, you make the assumption that the guy's got his head screwed on, John.
It's screwed on.
But then you hear about this. He's given out free sessions to Scientology E-meter readings. Big stars traditionally distribute rap
maybe
presents
it was a joke.
To crew members after completing a film. His recent gift after wrapping up next summer's comedy, Hancock. Is that a comedy?
Yeah, it's comedy. I told you. Didn't I talk about this on the show?
You did, but I thought it was sci-fi for some reason.
It is, but... It's comedy. He's like Superman.
It's a dark comedy, right? Because Will Smith is in it. It's a dark comedy.
Oh.
Good for
a
personality
test.
No, we got
a fan that listens to the show.
Hold on. Let me finish this science. Never mind that such tests are given by free by the church anyway. So he's giving them something that they could get for free if they just walked up to a stupid-ass Scientology tent in the first place. The quiz is designed to convert people to the religion identified by identifying personality flaws. that Scientology, surprise, surprise, can fix for you. For free. For a fee, of course.
Yeah.
Unbelievable to me. Do we have any L. Ron Hubbard clips?
Not handy.
All right, then. Next Scientology story. This is hot off the press, John. I haven't had time to vet this, but Britney Spears. And this woman is a complete whack job. Britney Spears has told family and friends she intends to marry her paparazzi lover. There's some guy she met like 2 weeks ago who's taken pictures of her. Now she's going to marry the guy. Adnan Galahib. In a Scientology marriage ceremony. The troubled singer, 26, phoned an aide with the news from a beach in Mexico where she fled by private jet with Galahib, 35, last week. She is due to appear in Los Angeles tomorrow, John, for a continuing battle of custody over her children. A friend described her wedding plan as harebrained, adding Brit blew a fuse again when she was told it would be an act of insanity to marry. Having a Scientology wedding is her way of giving her family a one-fingered salute.
Oh.
Unbelievable. Tom Cruise has taken over the world, John. Taken over the world.
But I thought she was into this Kabbalah, the Star of David and all that.
Not anymore. What is this woman into? She's into drugs.
She's into...
And she's bipolar. Who knows? She changes what she's into every 5 minutes. She's in the Kevin Federline.
Here's the thing. You remember we said, hey, her and Lindsay Lohan need to call us.
Call us.
But here's the thing. Even her own attorney is like, fuck this.
I can't deal with this.
I can't deal with this wacko. Because even if we were to be her handler, there's no way. It wouldn't work because she would just fucking just do whatever she wants. She is so self-destructive. And
it would work, John.
No. How
would
could
work.
It?
Would work, wacko. Because we would make it work. We would first set up ground rules. Here's the ground rules. Don't fuck with the ground rules. If you do, you know, then we get electroshock therapy, shit like that in there. Anything to get this woman's mind back on the right track. Whatever it takes. We're smarter than her. We can get her back.
But
we can get her back.
Nothing's getting it back. She's got kids, and a Federline is looking like the greatest dad in the world.
How could you could have anybody? You could have OJ, right. And he would be the greatest dad in the world.
That's what I'm saying.
Compared to this woman, she is completely. I didn't think it could get any worse.
Yeah,
and then you hear that she's going to have a Scientology marriage. Now, I find that hard to believe because. You would think Tom Cruise at some level would be have to give a sign off on this. You know, it'd have to come through him eventually. I heard he's second in command.
Well, he's number two. He's number two.
And Tom Cruise, I don't think he's that goddamn stupid to let this completely fucked up woman get married under the name Scientology. I mean, I think it would do more harm than Scientology than good.
Oh, no. And then if that happens, he'll make it his personal...
mission.
Mission to help her and change her ways.
Because
you
you're glib, John. You're glib.
I know. I am. I'm glib.
You don't know. I know. Okay? I know.
I'm glib. You're Scott.
Right.
Total right. Talk Nonsense with Glib and Scott.
In our last celebrity story, we're going to do John and Scott Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. John and Scott Theater. I wonder what would be the appropriate backing track for this.
Let's see.
Do we have anything from the soundtrack to West Side Story?
No.
Of course not. You know, we really should prepare more. We really need an intern is what we need.
Yeah.
Okay.
At this point in the game,
keep
right?
Keep this backing track. This is fine.
No, wait. I got some here. Hold
John
on.
And Scott Theater. This is from a Newsweek interview. Newsweek interviewed Clay Gaken.
How about this?
Yeah, it's great, man. Newsweek interviewed Clay Gaken. Now, when
Clay
we go in,
Gaken?
Yes, when we go into John and Scott Theater, John is going to be the Newsweek correspondent. I will be Clay Gaken. And here's how the interview went. Go ahead, John, if you will.
How's the Spamalot rehearsing going?
I'm sore. I couldn't even get off the toilet the other day. It hurts so bad. I don't know if I'm just not coordinated or using muscles I've never had to use before.
What? Where am I supposed to say something?
All right, we're going to break character here. That very next question, yeah. That's your question.
Yeah, but it doesn't say.
I know it doesn't say.
Have you seen Spam-a-Lot?
The first time I thought it was the stupidest thing I'd ever seen in my entire life. Kind of sounds like Phil, doesn't he?
Yeah, Clay. Yeah.
My tour drummer is the Spam-a-Lot drummer, and he said, you've got to see it again.
Are you a Python fan?
I thought Monty Python was a person until 3 months ago.
I thought you didn't think it was a big snake? Like a
no.
big giant cock?
No.
Oh. Do you think the Claymates will come to see you?
They'll be there in full force. I hope they behave.
Are they rowdy?
Sometimes. Sometimes they scare me every once in a while.
Do women throw their underwear on the stage?
In Minneapolis, we had a lady throw her panties in the middle of Silent Night. I'm like, are you kidding me? We've had ladies throw Depends that say, your older fans love you too.
So, Claymation, how did you get into a fight with that lady on a plane?
Oh, I'm not going to talk about that.
I was just curious because you've never talked about it.
I did talk about it.
What about the Kelly Ripa
thing? Oh, I'm not going to discuss that.
Did you think it was homophobic?
I'm not going to discuss it.
What do you want to talk about,
then? I think we're done.
Can we talk about something fun?
No, we're done. I thought Newsweek would be more reputable. I'm surprised.
Well, but I think people are curious about it.
That was a year ago. This is Newsweek. This is not the National Enquirer. I hate to have a job where I have to be rude to people.
We're just having a conversation.
Change the subject, you cocksucker.
I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom.
All right.
All right.
Thank you so
John
much,
and Scott Theater.
John and Scott Theater.
Right on. Nice job as the Newsweek reporter.
Thank you so much. It was a cold read, too.
Cold read, yeah.
Cold read.
For both of us.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't read it?
No, I did.
Oh, see, it's not a cold read, you liar.
It was a warm read for me. Turning to
you
science news, John. Science news. I'm excited about this science news.
Science news. Hold on. Can I read this little thing about MySpace? We talked about the dark comedy.
Of course.
Of Will Smith.
Yes.
And there was a little blurb on MySpace, a comment says, hey, John and Scott, I love TTN. It's a great podcast and gives me my fix of hot male-on-male action. I was going to make a rant about the racist jokes made on some of the podcasts. Yes, I'm a black female, until I came across a classic clip that changed my mind about the rant. I hope you guys had a great Xmas and a grand new year. I leave you two with a moment of randomness. And there's a couple of clips from YouTube.
Clips.
And it's from Icy Liaison.
So what is she saying? Is she saying that you're a racist, but...
No, I don't think so. I think she was offended by some of our racist rants.
We've had racist rants?
I guess. I
when
don't
did we have a racist rant?
A racist rant.
Michael
comments.
Richards had a racist rant
right.
that we commented about.
And I told
about.
Some jokes. I said nigger a couple of times.
Oh,
anyway,
right.
So the clip
yeah.
she sends me, or us, and I checked it out, was Paul Mooney, who writes a lot of stuff for Chappelle's Show. He used to write a lot of jokes for Richard Pryor. He's really... fucking funny. But the clip she sends me is him saying the word nigger like 500 times. And he just goes off about being black and all these things that don't forget you're black. You're not Brian Gumbel. You think you're this uppity kind of white guy. You're not. You're black. Stuff like... oh, sorry, we don't have any jobs for you until you're a slave, and then they got 12 jobs for you and all this stuff. And actually, I started watching, and I thought, wow, this is fucking hilarious. And then it started to wear on me, although I did comment back that I said Paul Mooney rocks, which I think he does. I think he's a very great writer, and he came out during this... the Michael Richards thing, and he said he's not going to say the N-word anymore. So he did a whole... comedy bit where he was not going to say the N-word and he slipped. He fucked up. He said he was never going to say it again and he still said it. So I don't know what that means, but to me, in light of the comments that were made by that news golf channel person, that woman who made the comment about lynching Tiger,
mm-hmm.
And then Tiger, who says she's a friend of mine, it's no big deal, you know, and a lot of people don't even know what the word lynch means, you know, other than it's a generic term for a mob, you know, hanging somebody or beating on them or whatever. And who comes out of the woodwork again? Reverend Al Sharpton.
Of course. Woodwork wacko, John.
Woodwork
that's what he is.
Wacko. And that's the only reason why I make any of those comments, because I know sometimes, yeah, they're hurtful, but, you know, I think we need at some point to move beyond that. I mean, then what shall we do? Is there a memo, a bunch of bullet points of words that certain people are not allowed to ever say?
Well, we don't even buy into that, because what we are firm believers in is freedom of speech.
Freedom of speech. Because
freedom of speech, freedom of press, because that's what makes this country so great.
You have the right to be offended.
You have the right to be offended.
The right to offend.
Right on. Now, we don't mean to offend. Like, I remember, if you go back and listen to some of our older science news podcasts, we said one of the greatest science stories ever is that we all came from black people.
Yeah.
That evolution, that white people are a mutation of evolution. We all, at one point, were black people. And we love that story. I love that story.
Well, I didn't inherit enough of the black gene.
Well, that's why you don't like the story. I like it because
I did. Because my penis isn't big enough. If I have a bigger dick, I remember I was talking to this black guy once, and a friend of mine, he said, so, man, why? Tell me why white people, if they don't want to be black, why are they always getting a tan? I said, because we want big dicks, too.
There you go.
Right.
Yeah. It reminds me of your Flintstone joke.
What joke was that?
The Flintstone joke.
How's that go again?
I can't remember.
I don't.
Anyway, let's move on to science.
Lazy wussy, you puss. Anyways, I want to just say one little thing about about the Reverend Al Sharpton, Mister. I never say anything bad about anybody, right? He called Greeks homos in one of his rants. Well, that's fine.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I'm just saying, a guy who should practice what he preaches, if he's so much of a God-worshipping man, he speaks for the Lord, he definitely forgets about, Ephesians 4:32, and be kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. Meaning that when he went on this rant to fire, wacko pulled off the air? Imus. How would he like it if God fired him?
For the nappy-headed hose.
Yeah. How would he like it if God fired him for all the shit he said?
I don't know. Can God do that?
About the white interloper.
Did we play Pat Robertson last week?
I don't remember.
God damn it. I have some Pat Robertson clips. He talked to God again. I don't know if you know that.
Did he?
Yeah.
Anyways, Al Sharpton, a coke dealing, coke buying, doing.
Allegedly.
No, it says here that FBI tapes cocaine in 2002. HBO aired a 19-year-old FBI surveillance of Sharpton with self-described mobster Michael Frenzies. And an undercover FBI agent posing as a Latin American businessman. The three were discussing promoting boxing matches and musical events. HBO's Real Sports got a hold of the hidden camera video and shows undercover agent Victor Quintana posing as a drug dealer trying to convince Sharpton to play a middleman in a big cocaine buy.
That was entrapment.
Sharpton asked the undercover agents, "What kind of time limit are we dealing with?" "Coke?" the agent asked. "Yeah," Sharpton says. The phony drug dealer says, could be about the same time we have 4 million coming to us. Sharpton says end of April. End of April, 6 weeks from now. That is a good time, you think? The agent asks. Probably, Sharpton replies.
Entrapment.
So, you think so?
Yeah, why isn't he in jail?
I don't know.
Entrapment.
Probably.
All right, moving on to science news, John. Great science story. Helium supplies. Did you know this? I had no idea.
Helium supplies.
I thought helium was something that we could just make, you know, like an ice cream cone. But no. Helium supplies endangered, threatening science and technology. The element that lifts things like balloons, spirits, and voice ranges is being depleted so rapidly in the world's largest reserve outside of Amarillo, Texas, that supplies are expected to be depleted there within the next 8 years. We are going to run out of helium.
Really?
Fortunately for us, we have our own helium machine here, and we're going to do everything we can to cut that 8 years to 6 years, John.
Yeah.
We want to run out of helium in 6 years. And it goes on to state that helium's use in science
is extremely broad.
Ooh, I just took a hit.
Dude.
Hold on, let me take another hit.
Oh, yeah. It goes on to say that helium's use is extremely broad, but its most important use is the coolant. A coolant, John. You know that. Helium is non-renewable and irreplaceable. See, that's what I didn't know. I thought we just made this shit. But no, it's
I got some too, man.
Petroleum or... Hold on. Yeah. Russia will be the world's major source of helium.
Have you ever heard about liquid helium?
In 30 years. No, I've never heard that.
It's a super flow liquid, I believe it's called.
Yeah,
and it has the ability to, because it has no viscosity.
Right, viscosity.
When you fill a glass full of liquid helium and you try to push it into
a
bowl of liquid helium, it will actually spill out of the top of the glass to level itself.
Wow.
It defies all physics.
Really?
Yeah, check it out.
I wonder if it could be the key to unifying the general theory of relativity
it
with
could
quantum
be.
Mechanics.
It could be.
Right on.
It'll even leak through the bottom of a beaker. What are you smoking there,
I'm
man?
I'm just keeping the helium high going, baby. We got to deplete this. Continue science news.
My voice is getting lower.
We're going to continue science news on helium.
On helium, okay.
Right. All right, next science story, John.
Yeah.
A study argues that violent movies reduce crime. Did you hear that?
Whoa.
The old idea, violent movies arouse violent feelings. The new idea, yeah, but these movies attract violent people, thereby keeping them off the streets. Between 6 p.m. and 12 a.m., 1 million increase in the audience for violent movies reduces violent crime by 1.1 to 1.3%.
Wow.
Number two, after exposure to a movie between 12 a.m. and 6 a.m., violent crime is reduced by an even larger percent. Number three,
violent movies. Hold on. I gotta take another hit.
Almost 1,000 assaults on an average weekend. Theory, self-selection of violent individuals into violent movie attendance results in their voluntary incapacitation.
Huh.
Keeping them away from booze and mischief. What do you think of that? Huh?
Bad, yeah.
Huh?
Take that.
Take that, you violent crime.
Hillary Clinton.
Correlation.
Family recreation fuck-ups, whatever
cause
it's called.
And effect fuckers. Yeah.
Cause and effect fuckers.
You motherfucker.
All right, next science story, John. It turns out that one of humanity's oldest professions, baby, even older than we thought, in a recent study of macaque monkeys in Indonesia,
researchers found that male primates paid for sexual access to females.
No.
And that the going rate for such access dwindled.
Oh, my voice is getting
as
lower.
The number of available females went up. Supply.
One big pile of shit.
And demand.
Wow.
According to the big burpee. Paid for the sex in the mankin mating market, published in December. Males in a group of about 50 long-tailed mekoes, Indonesia, traded grooming services for sex with females.
Oh.
Researchers who studied the monkeys for some 20 months found that males offered their payment up front as a kind of pre-sex ritual. It worked! After the females were groomed, their male partners... Male partners' female sexual activity more than doubled. Right on. No doubt.
Yes, you. You hold me down, make me take it. You hold me down, make me take it.
Though primates have been observed trading grooming for food sharing or infant care, this is the first time that this kind of exchange has been observed between male and female primates in a sexual context, says lead researcher Michael Gemmert. Right on. So monkeys are having prostitution. It really is the oldest profession there, John. All right, then. Our last science story, turning to... I don't know if you've ever heard of these, John. You ever heard of the Darwin Awards? Darwin.
Yeah.
Named after Charles Darwin.
Yeah, I've heard of that guy.
Yeah, so anyway, what these are these are awards that go to people that remove themselves from the gene pool, thereby enhancing or strengthening the evolution of the human species, if you will. So, our first Darwin... All right, we're going to talk about the top five and then the champion, Darwin of 2007. Now, these are fuck-ups.
All right.
Who took themselves out of the gene pool. Number five, driving is not a time to be practicing your multitasking skills, remarked a chip spokesman, Tom Marshall, commenting on 29-year-old computer tutor, his decision to drive along Highway 99 in California while working on his laptop. He drifted over the center line and was killed by oncoming traffic.
Good.
Chip officers found Oscar's computer still running, plugged into the Honda Accord cigarette lighter.
Well, at least that lived.
That's number five. Go ahead with number four there, John.
Number four. It's a superior momentum. It's entitled June 2007, Illinois. Two Valparaiso men tested their reflexes by playing chicken with a train. Which man could stay on the rail the longest in the path of an oncoming train? At the stroke of midnight, the contest was decided. The winner, aptly named Patrick Stiff, lost his life. The train continued on as the conductor was unaware that it hit anyone.
All right, John, continuing at number... Number three, January 2007, West Virginia. Three friends set out to dismantle a dilapidated barn one bracing winter afternoon. Speaking of bracing, one industrious man fired up his chainsaw and ripped through a crucial support post, carrying the weight of the full barn roof. These wooden support beams were all that stood between the demolition worker and the structural collapse. It was all fun and games until the roof, sans support, succumbed to the pull of gravity and flattened the man with the chainsaw. As a consolation prize, the deceased was indeed successful.
Ow.
At demolishing the barn.
Well, that's a positive note.
An addendum. This is an addendum. This was the year of the Squash Darwin Award winner. Two other groups of people attempted to remove the supports from beneath a water tower and a heavy factory roof. In both cases, the structure collapsed with their aptly named supports. Number two, Scott.
entitled Mole Hunt.
Are you sure it's not Mike Hunt?
Ooh, that's funny.
Mike Crotch? No, it's Mole Hunt.
Peter Gazinta?
Gazinta what?
Gazinta your ass, you knucklehead. January 2007, East Germany. One man's extraordinary effort to eradicate a mole from his property resulted in a victory for the mole. The metal rods that he pounded into the ground and connected to a high-voltage power line... You know this isn't going to end well.
No.
High-voltage power line electrified the very ground the man stood upon. He was found dead at his holiday property on the Baltic Sea. Police had to trip the main circuit breaker before venturing onto the property.
And runner-up number one, John, this is out of South Carolina. What goes up must come down. A passing cabbie found a 21-year-old deceased couple laying naked in the road an hour before sunrise. Authorities were baffled. There were no witnesses, no trace of clothing, and no wrecked vehicles present. But investigators eventually found a clue. High on the roof of the building. 2 sets of neatly folded clothes. Safe sex takes on a whole new meaning when you are perched on the edge of a pyramid-shaped metal roof. It appears if they accidentally stooped each other and then fell off of a roof, Sergeant McCann said. Wow. And the number one Darwin Award winner is... The Enema Within. Go ahead, John.
May 2004, Texas. Michael was an alcoholic, and not an ordinary alcoholic, but an alcoholic who liked to take his liquor by the ears. I mean, well, rectally.
What?
His wife said he was addicted to enemas and often used alcohol in this manner. The result was the same. That's one drunk-ass motherfucker, get it?
Right on.
Drunk-ass. The result was the same. Inebriation. And tonight, Michael was in for one hell of a party. 2 1.5-liter bottles of sherry, more than 100 fluid ounces, right up the old address. Or anus. Or... Maybe you would like to call it...
Tete-anus.
Yes. When the rest of us have had enough, we either stop drinking or pass out. When Michael had had enough and subsequently passed out, the alcohol remaining in his rectal cavity continued to be absorbed. The next morning, Michael was dead. The 58-year-old did a pretty good job of embalming himself. Toxicology reports measures his blood alcohol level at 0.47. So what the hell is that? 0.5%?
That's a lot. Right, at 0.08.
Yeah.
Ooh. Gets you in the slammer.
Wow. A slammer in the ass. A slammer of sherry. Sharon Dix. Anyways, in order to qualify for a Darwin Award, a person must resume...
I've been drinking it all. It's the helium, man.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean,
it fucks with your neurons. Because I'm a neuroscientist.
You are. In order to qualify for a Darwin Award, a person must remove himself from the gene pool via an astounding misapplication of judgment. 3 liters of sherry up the butt can only be described as astounding. Unsurprisingly, his neighbor said they were surprised to learn of the incident. And there you have it, Scott.
That's right on, John. 2007 Darwin Awards. And that's it for science news, so we could just let the helium wear off and move on to other things.
Wow. That's great.
That is great, man. We got to keep those tanks filled.
Whew.
That's some kind of a high. You know what I'm saying?
I feel lightheaded.
Know what I'm saying?
I know what I'm saying.
Right on. All right, then. Let's turn to politics there, Johnny.
Politics. Politics.
Right. What do you got?
Shit, it's 11 o'clock.
What do you got?
What do I got? What do I got? Hold on.
All right.
I got to get the tunes playing, all right? There we go. The future is a joke, Scott.
Future's right now, John.
The future is right now. What was I looking at here? Here it is. The official, well, you heard about this last week, these Navy boats, these Iranian Navy boats were buzzing around three destroyers trying to, supposedly there was this video footage of them messing with our own Navy. And they just got speed boats, you know.
Right.
That's the Iranian Navy. Five little speedboats.
Speedboats. Jet skis, if you will.
They're probably out there on holiday, you know, doing some tubing. Right?
Right on.
So anyways, this comes out, there's this video, and all the right wingers jump on it, and even Israel and stuff, they want the U.S. to start dropping nukes. And then the official version comes out. And it says here, despite the official and media portrayal of an incident in the Strait of Hormuz early Monday morning as a serious threat to U.S. ships from Iranian speedboats that nearly resulted in a battle at sea, new information over the past 3 days suggests that the incident did not involve such a threat and that no U.S. commander was on the verge of firing at the Iranian boats. The new information, and that's what was all over the news. ABC, NBC, whoever, they're all like, yeah, an incident that happened Monday almost caused the lives of the Iranian Navy because we were about to blow them out of the water. The new information that appears to contradict the original version of the incident includes the revelation that U.S. officials spliced the audio recording of an alleged Iranian threat onto a videotape of the incident. That suggests that the threatening message may not have come in immediately after the initial warning to Iranian boats from a U.S. warship, as it appears to do so on the video.
Well, it also suggests that it's been doctored, right?
Yeah, right.
And it's all a fabrication.
Yep.
Propaganda, John. Catapulting the propaganda.
Yep. And it says here, also unraveling the story is testimony from a former U.S. naval officer that non-official chatter is common on the channel used to communicate with the Iranian boats, and testimony from the commander of the U.S. 5th Fleet that the commanding officers of the U.S. warships involved in the incident never felt the need to warn the Iranians of a possible use of force against them. Further undermining the U.S. version of the incident is a video released by Iran Thursday showing an Iranian naval officer on a small boat hailing one of the three ships, and basically said, Coalition Warship 73, this is Iranian Navy patrol boat. He then requests the side numbers of the U.S. warships. A voice with a U.S. accent replies, this is a Coalition Warship 73. I am operating in international waters. Typical of the network coverage was a story by ABC's Jonathan Carl, quoting a Pentagon official as saying the Iranian boats were a heartbeat from being blown up.
Whoa.
Which is a bunch of shit.
Bunch of shit.
So they've been blowing up a bunch of innocent people that weren't doing anything but making sure that whoever these ginormous gray battleships were out there, that they were operating within their limits.
A bunch of shit.
That is one big pile of
shit.
I'm no big fan of the Iranians, but Jesus Christ, you got to fucking fabricate everything to come to grips with starting another war with another country. What the fuck is going on with this country?
I think it goes back to your belief system, and the W's belief system and the administration's belief system is so goddamn warped that they see whatever is a threat and something that they can turn around and try to get the people of this country to support them again. and go into Middle East and cause more fucking chaos, John.
Chaos.
Before I get to the W, Democratic presidential candidate Mike Gavel told a group of high school students on Sunday that marijuana is safer than alcohol. Did you hear that?
No.
Alcohol is a heck of a lot worse than marijuana, and I'm sure a lot of you have tripped out on alcohol, Gavel said. Can you trip out on alcohol?
I guess.
It's
I
a lot
did
safer
last week.
To do it on marijuana. Right on. Gavel has called for the decriminalization of minor drug offenses and better treatment for abuses of hard drugs.
Get this, Scott. Are you done with that story?
I'm done.
Anything goes. The anything goes attitude now much less so in Amsterdam. And this is political. The vacation sort of just flew by. Ryan Ainsworth and Richie Bendelo.
Bendelo.
Dick Bendelo. I don't know why I didn't pick up on that before. That's funny. Damn, that sucks. Found a shop selling 500 herbal potions that promised to make them high and happy in 500 ways. But the British tourists went right for the hallucinogenic mushrooms. After forking over $24, they gobbled up the entire box. Prostitution, abortion, euthanasia, same-sex marriage, and magic mushrooms have long been legal here, and soft drugs such as marijuana are technically illegal, but are sold with official sanction in small amounts in coffee houses. In recent years, however, uneasiness over the influx of Muslim and black immigrants has, as well as a lifestyle that many believe has gone too far, have shifted the Dutch mood away from tolerance and infinite permissiveness, Scott. And check this out.
So what are they going to do?
What year were we there?
I don't know, 2003?
And we went to the one of the first places we went to, we drank some beers.
Beer.
And kind of hung out and said, hey, man, is everybody looking at us? And
that was
blah,
me.
Blah, blah.
I was very paranoid.
Yeah. In 2006, Parliament stopped. In 2006, Scott, Parliament stopped coffee houses from selling alcohol if they sell marijuana. Now legislators are trying to have them located at least 250 yards from schools, which I think that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
This year, a ban on the sale of hallucinogenic mushrooms goes into effect, so they're not going to have those anymore.
Well, we didn't partake in that anyway.
No, I'd freak out on that.
I got paranoid enough on the local herb.
Anyways, this guy here, Joel Wunderwine, grew up in this city, reveling in the punk music scene. Now 42... and a member of Parliament, his Christian Union Party, which bases much of its policy on biblical doctrine, is trying to remake a government that, in his estimation, has been morally adrift. Although his party controls only 2 of 16 ministries, it aligned with liberals to fight for refugees, poor families, and the environment, while also condemning homosexuality, euthanasia, abortion, and youthful experimentation with everything. He says the people are fed up with the lazy attitude of government, we call it. If it's forbidden, we let it go. Like soft drugs, it's forbidden, but we look the other way, he said. We have a lot of that kind of policy, and it is giving people the feeling that the government was telling them to go their own way.
What's wrong with that?
Well, I think some shocking events like the killings of populist politician Pim Fortuyn in 2002 and filmmaker Theo van Gogh in 2004, both of whom fanned fears of Islamic extremism, have traumatized this mostly white Christian country. So basically,
so just kick all the Muslims out and still sell the pot. What's the problem?
Yeah, they make great taxi drivers, right? As you found, as you eyeballed the one guy.
Great, yeah, they're the best.
The district is now a tourist attraction, not because of the nice buildings, but because of the windows. He said, "It's a very sad situation. I want it completely changed." So he wants the red light district totally worked over.
Well, are they going to take the church out right out of the middle of the red light district, or are they going to keep that there?
I don't know. They don't say. But he wants all that shit changed. And guess what? It's another conservative Christian right political party using church and biblical doctrine to come up with the policies for the government. And when we were there, it was very clean. They had this great transportation system. The buildings were really cool. Even in February, it looked
outdoor
like a really,
urinals.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a great experience.
Laid back.
I think in spring it would be even better. And there's just this one section, one tiny section, and there's cops everywhere. There's coffee houses. I didn't feel threatened at all.
I didn't either.
And the Red Lake District, it's a sight to see. I mean, you got to see it. It's cool. And you see during the day, it's still going on, and people are cruising through there with their kids on their bikes and stuff, and everything seems pretty normal. I mean, and when I came back home, I said to the wife, yeah, we got to go there. We got to have a trip there. It'll be great. I'm not going there. They have Needle Park. I said, honey, that's Zurich.
Oh.
It's not fucking Holland. They don't have that.
Holland. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get back over there. We got to go see, Paulie B and Tony Hearn over there in the UK with Stephen C.
No doubt.
And maybe jump over to Amsterdam with those cats.
No doubt.
And hook up with Heinz Gruber.
Have you ever heard this, Scott?
The
Texas obscenity statute, or is the slang name for a Texas law, state law. The Texas obscenity statute. In 1973, I don't know if we've ever talked about this. In 1973, the state legislature passed Section 43.21 of the Penal Code, the Texas Penal Code, which in part prohibits the sale of promotion of obscene devices, meaning a device including a dildo or artificial vagina, designed or marketed as useful primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs.
Well, who makes the decision on whether it's obscene or not?
That's what I didn't get, but it says the prosecution under the statute is rare, but has occurred on occasion. In Burleson in 2004, for example, Joan Webb, a mother of three and a former school teacher, faced up to a year in prison for selling a vibrator to two undercover police officers posing as a married couple at a private party. What the fuck?
Why can't you do that?
What the fuck is that? I don't know. That's part of the penal code, Scott.
The penal code.
She was later acquitted, and undercover officers were issued reprimands.
Of course she was acquitted.
In 2007, a lingerie shop in Lubbock was raided, and items deemed to be illegal by the Texas Penal Code were confiscated. The clerk on duty at the time was arrested and may have to register as a sex offender. Because they sell
going to
dildos.
Work?
Dildos, yeah.
Dildos.
That's how it's spelled.
Dildos?
Yeah. Section 43.23 of the code deals with promotion. A person commits an offense if he possesses with intent to wholesale, promote, or any obscene material or obscene device. A person who possesses six or more obscene devices is presumed to possess them with intent to promote the same. This section carries higher penalties, and for this reason, those businesses that trade in items covered under the act usually market them as novelties or educational items. Dildos are often referred to as cake toppers in sex shops in Texas to bypass the law. So if you own more than six dildos, Scott, you're a dealer. You're a dildo dealer.
Well, I'm okay
there. Can you
believe
that?
No, I can't believe that. And my wife has friends in Texas, and I've been wanting to go down there.
And ask them about their dildos?
No, just to see what... It seems like every story we read about Texas, it seems like a goddamn another country.
It does. Did I ever tell you, I was down there once, another Scott, who had a DUI here. He's now a born-again Christian. And I went to visit him down there in Fort Worth. And he told me to getting chicks down there is so easy because there are so many women to men. There's like three women to one man.
Good ratio.
And they're all, the bad part is that they're all single moms. The teen pregnancy is unbelievable there. So you got to be careful because they all want you to be their the dad of their kids. So it's easy to hook up with one and do whatever, but they all want you. Oh, if you got $20 in your pocket, you're rich, you know. So one day we're in this area called Deep Ellum. It's Elm Street, and they call it Deep Ellum down there. And it's during the day, and we're gonna hang out all night. And so we're walking down this one boardwalk, and this chick drives by. She's driving in her car, and she's looking at this friend of mine, Scott, because he's a good looking guy. He works out. He was gonna be a personal trainer, and we're about to go in this one bar, and he waves at her. And as he waves at her, she's waving back at him.
Car accident.
And doesn't realize the cars are stopped in front of her. And she fucking rear ends a car. And Scott goes, "We gotta run." And we start running. I'm like, "Why?" And we're running. We run into this Pizza Hut or something. "Why?" He goes, "Dude, because she'll like somehow blame it on us. And next thing I know, I'm married to her and she's probably got 10 kids. And I'm like, "What the fuck are you talking about? Why would you want to live here?" And it was all to get away from a DUI.
Does here he still in Illinois. Live there?
Yeah. He's lived in a bunch of places, and he called me right after 9/11 to tell me that he loved me and God loves me because this is Armageddon.
Well, let's get him on the show.
Oh, my God. All right.
Speaking of Texas in the fuck-ups that come from Texas, let's talk about the W now.
All right.
President Bush on Thursday predicted that a Middle East peace treaty would be completed by the time he leaves office. What a stupid, arrogant a-hole. I mean, this guy is delusional. He undercut that optimism with harsh criticism of Hamas, who currently control the land that would form an eventual independent Palestine. So he comes over to the Middle East, and he says, "Hey, we're going to get this peace process done."
Yeah.
But Hamas is a bunch of a-holes. Yeah, that's really going to help the W. And he told everybody he's got 12 months to get it done. And all he's concerned about is his dumbass legacy.
Right.
He still thinks that he's going to have some sort of a positive legacy. If that ain't delusional, I bet you Ronald Reagan, at the peak of Alzheimer's, wasn't as delusional as this idiot.
I know. He's just grabbing at anything. He's like drowning.
He goes to Pakistan, right?
Yeah.
He has meetings with Israel and Palestine. And Thursday, a peace accord will require, here's what he said, a painful political concession by each. So resolving the status of Jerusalem will be hard, John, he said. And get this, he called for the end of occupation of Arab land by the Israeli military. Okay, so
what the hell are we doing?
Enough to go and tell Israel, get the fuck out of there, while we have... over 100,000 troops in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Iraq. We got bases in Saudi Arabia.
This guy's goddamn mental.
Delusional.
Mental. Then, John, because he's on this world tour, guess where he stopped? He stopped at Auschwitz.
Auschwitz.
A teary-eyed President Bush stopped in front of an aerial photo of Auschwitz.
Because his grandfather was a sympathizer.
On Friday, right. Who got made money off the Nazis.
Yeah.
At Israel's Holocaust Memorial and said the U.S. Here's what he said. The U.S. should have sent bombers to prevent the extermination of Jews there. Avner Shalev quoted Bush as saying the U.S. should have bombed it. That's what the W said. We should have. I'm tearing up, but you know what? We should have bombed it. We should have bombed it. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice said Bush referred to the train tracks leading to Auschwitz. Not the camp itself, where between 1.1 million and 1.5 million people were killed by Nazi Germany. So this guy is so goddamn out of it that people don't even understand him.
Condoleezza Rice has to clarify what he said. He didn't mean we should bomb Auschwitz. He meant that we should bomb the train tracks leading to and from Auschwitz, you see. Shalev quoted Bush as asking Rice, Condi, why didn't Roosevelt bomb it? He said Rice and Bush discussed the matter further, and then the president delivered his verdict. So what that means is Condoleezza took him aside and said, will you shut your fucking mouth?
Yeah, shut your face.
Can you learn anything about history before you open that trap of yours? So then Bush went on to said, get this shit. I was most impressed that people in the face of horror and evil would not forsake their God, John. I'm sorry, I'm choking up.
You okay?
In the face of unmistakable crimes against humanity, brave souls, young and old, stood strong for what they believed. How the hell did they stand strong? They were in a goddamn prison camp being exterminated. Yeah. They had no other goddamn choice. They either were exterminated or they survived.
Right.
This guy trivializes stuff because his intellect is so dim. It infuriates me.
You're glib, Scott.
I am glib. And it makes me upset at Marty for voting for this guy. And all you others who voted for him, special ed, you know what I'm talking about. He went on to say, I wish as many people as possible could come to this place. It is a sobering reminder that evil exists. And a call that when evil exists, we must resist it. Okay, so he's trying to correlate that with the current fuck-up.
Yeah.
That he got us in Iraq.
Yeah.
You motherfucker.
Fucking A, man. Fucking A. All right, I'm going to go get the door, but I do have a W clip I want to play.
All right.
I mean, this guy's approval rating's in the shitter. Arguably one of the worst presidents in the history of the world.
Yeah.
We're heading into a recession. We got this. Iraq is continuing for who knows how long. All his friends are making bajillions of dollars on this.
Yeah.
There's no accountability. He's claiming executive privilege. He's got the Justice Department in his back pocket. We got illegal FBI warrant taps. We got assault on our civil liberties and the Constitution, John. And here's what a reporter who has an interview with the W, here's what a reporter asks him. He asks him about his faith. Go ahead and play this clip.
And I was moved. Do you think people have misinterpreted what your faith means to you as a leader? Maybe people think your faith makes you rigid in your thinking.
Mm. There may be some of that. I mean, there are people who aren't faith-filled people who are suspicious of those who are because they believe that, one, I may think I'm bigger, better than them, or, two, that somehow, you know, I don't make rational decisions, from their perspective, but their decisions based upon some metaphysical presence. I tell people that my faith is a personal journey that helps me find calm in the midst of the storm. My faith, I strongly believe, has helped me establish personal relations with other leaders of faith. I think of my friend, the King of Saudi Arabia. We share a different faith, but I've made it clear to him we share the same God.
What?
I don't know what the hell that guy's talking about. You have W in a one-on-one interview, and you ask him these softball goddamn questions.
Yeah, that's that big giant 7-foot pussy.
Gregory.
Gregory, yeah. David Gregory. Big suck ass. He's a journalist. My ass.
Faith-filled people, John. Faith-filled people.
What is with these cream puff fucking news people now?
Well, not only that, but if you listen to the clip, you can tell it was edited. You can tell that the W probably went into one of his stammers.
Yeah.
And they just cut that out. Because there's no way in the history of the world that the W ever strung two sentences together as
strungs,
quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, strung.
Strungs them.
As it was displayed in that clip.
Oh, I think just Phil just shot himself outside. He's
and then
enough.
I love at the end he mentions his good friend, the King of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Now, there's no way that he believes that his God is the same
and
God.
And guess who flew into the World Trade Center?
Saudis. John.
Saudis.
Saudis. But that's his good friend in Saudi Arabia.
Al-Qaeda's a bunch of Iraqis. Yeah, give me a fucking break.
You don't even have to talk conspiracy theory. I mean, it's so blatantly obvious. It's so black and white that this guy is overwhelmed to begin with. Second of all, the part that's now overwhelmed, he's able to help his friends in Saudi Arabia and all his oil buddies make a shitload of money.
Yeah.
How much, what, $100 a barrel now? And Jesus
then,
H.
And then we give all this fucking money to the goddamn Pakistani dude, and what the hell's he doing with it? To Musharraf.
He's assassinating the opposition. And then did you hear what he said?
Al-Qaeda said
it was her fault.
It's her fault, yeah.
It was her fault because she stood up out of the car. That's her fault.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that. Yeah, it's
fucking
her fault.
Shot in the neck by, and it was Al-Qaeda, right.
And that's another one
and
of
he's
W's
the one
friends.
Who's supposed to be stopping and getting all this money from us to help stop Al-Qaeda. This fucking bunch of... leave these losers alone.
This same guy that is supposedly Bush's friend and that we've given $10 billion to turned around and said, if the U.S. enters any of our territory, right. we will consider that a hostile event. And there will be repercussions.
We will get you. Da.
Yeah, he said it more like that.
Yeah.
That big pussy.
I work with an Indian guy, and he's constantly getting emails from his cousin or something over in India who wants to know when Bush is going to blow Pakistan off the map.
Oh, that's not going to happen.
I know.
Bush is concerned about Iran and his legacy. What a dope.
Well, Iran, you know, is they're another oil rich country too. So
who knows? I wonder what the motivation for this foreign policy is.
Shoot himself again.
Wouldn't you like to know the truth? What is the truth? Just tell the goddamn truth.
You would think that we would have one fucking journalist trying to find the truth.
No,
not one.
They want to ask him about his faith.
Yeah.
Like, that has anything to do with anything.
And what cracks me up is every time you heard them talking about where Bush was visiting, he's visiting Jerusalem where Jesus was born. Is there proof of that? Is there proof that Jesus was born there? Could you say that the Christians believe that Jesus was born? They're confirming that Jesus was born in Jerusalem.
Everybody knows that, John.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
What about Muhammad?
Didn't we just celebrate Christmas?
I thought Muhammad was born there.
They were all born there.
No, but at the same time.
Yeah, let me get the door. Phil's.
Can you please?
Yeah, hold on.
Before he shoots himself. It's too late now. Might as well just turn back around. I don't think he's coming today. Is he okay?
Hey, man. Come on in.
Oh. Just a right, flesh wound?
Yeah, he's all right. I think he was just shooting it in the air.
Oh.
Leaving something left over from New Year's, huh?
Yeah. We'll find out. All right, I'm done. I think I'm done.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, I'm done.
I had one little story about PETA. You know PETA?
Yeah, the protection of...
People for the ethical treatment of animals.
Right on.
Now remember, this is the people for the ethical treatment of animals.
Right. So here's the interesting thing, though. They'll throw blood on humans, who are animals. So they won't treat humans ethically.
Right.
But they go out of their way to make sure that bunny rabbits and dogs and cats are treated ethically.
Right.
Well, and lobsters.
It just came out that they killed 97% of companion animals in 2006.
What does that mean, John? 97% of companion.
It means that they took in a bunch of dogs and cats.
So
well, here's what it says.
They rescued them from a shelter.
Right. An official report from the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals submitted 9 months after Virginia government agency's deadline shows that the animal rights group put to death more than 97% of the dogs, cats, and other pets it took in for adoption in 2006. During that year, the well-known animal rights group managed to find adoptive homes for just 12 pets, Scott. The nonprofit Center for Consumer Freedom is calling on PETA to either end its hypocritical Angel of Death program or stop its senseless condemnation of Americans who believe it's perfectly ethical to use animals for food, clothing, and critical medical research. Not counting animals PETA held only temporarily in its spay-neuter program, the organization took in 3,061 companion animals in 2006, of which it killed 2,981. According to Virginia's Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, the average euthanasia rate for humane societies in the state was just 34.7% in 2006. PETA killed 97.4% of the animals it took in. The organization filed its 2006 report this month, 9 months after the VDACS deadline of March 31st, 2007.
Any comment from PETA?
It only says, here, what does it say? No, they don't really comment, but it says in courtroom testimony last year, a PETA manager acknowledged that her organization maintains a large walk-in freezer for storing dead animals, and that PETA contracts with a Virginia cremation service to dispose of the bodies. In that trial, two PETA employees were convicted of dumping dead animals in a rural North Carolina trash dumpster. And here it says PETA raised over $30 million last year, and it's using that money to kill the only flesh and blood animals its employees actually see. The scale of PETA's hypocrisy is simply fucking staggering, Scott.
Can I play the devil's advocate for sure. PETA side? If I'm a PETA representative, here's what I say. We ended the suffering of those animals. We had to. There was no other choice. So instead of stringing them along and having them suffer more, we terminated their lives, ending their suffering in a humane way.
By throwing them in a dumpster.
Well, they're already dead by then. I mean, as PETA, we're concerned with living animals.
Well, we're ending the suffering of cows and chickens who don't really have much of a life, and we enjoy their beef. The beef that they give off, the steaks, the nice chicken fillets, you know. What about that?
It's the purpose. The purpose of raising cows is to have steaks. The purpose of raising dogs and cats is to have companions.
Right.
So the motivation and the ethics behind the purpose is what I, am upset about.
Fine, but you raise $30 million. These humane societies that barely bring in any cash at all are able to find more homes for pets, and you can only find fucking homes for 12.
Unfortunately,
with your 30 Brazilian fucking dollars, instead of releasing a comic book showing how mom chops up a rabbit and serves it to their kids and giving this comic book to kids, spend the money trying to find some homes for the fucking dogs, or let a humane society do it.
Unfortunately, John, in an organization like ours, PETA, we are very vocal about what we believe, but when it comes to following up on those actions, we are very lacking. And it is, I agree, hypocritical.
That is one big pile of shit.
It is a big pile of shit.
Yeah.
So, PETA, get out of our face.
Yeah,
all right?
Fuck off, PETA.
Fuck that. All right, then.
I'm all for treating animals nice. I got a dog. I think, you know, what Michael Vick did was completely retarded. It was a bunch of shit.
That is shit.
But PETA is just, they just go way overboard with their shit.
Right on,
throwing blood
man.
On people.
A little loud.
So. No.
No. Like a John? Again, it's always fascinating to listen to you two debate, exchange ideas.
Phil McCracken Whitcomb.
But I do not enjoy that more than delivering the news.
Obviously.
And our first story tonight, John. Weekend at Bernie's the Saint. Corpse tries to cash Social Security check. Even for the once notorious Hell's Kitchen neighborhood, it may have been a first. Two men were arrested on Tuesday after pushing a corpse seated in an office chair along the sidewalk to a check cashing store to cash the dead man's Social Security check. When Virgiligo
Cintron, 66, died in his apartment in 52nd Street recently. His roommate and friend saw an opportunity to cash his $355 check. They did not go about it the easy way, the police said, choosing a ruse that resembled a plot from Weekend at Bernie's. Hell's Kitchen has a rich history, said Paul J. Brown, but this is one for the books. There was no sign of foul play in Mr. Cintron's death, he added. Next story, John.
You motherfucker.
That is a very refreshing bumper. It's good to have that back in our repertoire, John. Continue on with the news. Gitmo detainees less than human. On the sixth anniversary of an imprisonment of detainees at Gitmo Bay, the United States judge threw out a lawsuit brought by four former British detainees against Ronald Dumsfeld and senior military officers for ordering torture and religious abuse, ruling that the detainees are not persons under U.S. law, which, according to another judge, means they are less than human beings. In related news, White House lawyers are mulling this over as a possible defense for the W. Next story, John. Excuse me, Jesus, son of God. Are you just happy to see me? Or do you have a giant... A controversial piece of artwork has been blasted by a Christian group because it depicts Jesus with an erect penis. The statue is one of 74 plaster models in exhibit.
It's part of his erection.
Gone yet still. Oh, that's funny, John. By Chinese-born artist Terence Ku, which features sculptures from Michelangelo's David to E.T. The artwork is being exhibited at a Baltic Center of Contemporary Art. Evangelical group Christian Voice expressed outrage at the work. Even the Jellicles calling it blasphemous and saying it created a storm of protest. Christian Voice National Director Stephen Green fumed. It's the Lord Jesus Christ being humiliated, ridiculed, and vilified. It's just so disgusting, pornographic, and offensive. It's hard to find the words to express my outrage.
Wait,
I have
that?
Written asking for the statue's destruction. Mr. Green was planning to protest outside the gallery this weekend, but the Art Center still plans to keep the exhibit open until the end of its run on January 20th. Next story, John. In related news, the Lord, our God, relegates Huckabee to second place finish in the latest South Carolina survey. Next story, John. In related news.
More related news.
Oh, I'm sorry, Phil.
You okay, Phil?
Yeah, no, it's
Scott?
Me. It's Scott.
I can't tell sometimes.
Yeah, I should really have a cough button. I apologize.
A cough drop.
Lozenge. Yeah, maybe a lozenge.
Are you getting sick?
No, I hope not.
Oh, no.
Well, getting back to the news, I hope you're feeling well. I'm looking forward to attending the gig January 19th of the Big Top.
I have some throat cream.
Oh, really? Well, I might be interested in some of that. All right, then. Next story. This is the good news. The second coming of Christ may be upon us. That's the good news, John. The bad news, this time, God fucked a Hungarian shark.
Oh,
a Hungarian aquarium is celebrating an extraordinary virgin birth after its lone female shark produced a pup without ever having come into contact with a male shark. The white-tipped reef shark named Ebolaya by staff has been on her own at the Nikasakawaza Center since she was born 7 years ago. When I saw the baby shark lying at the bottom of the tank, I thought it was a joke, the center's director said. I was amazed when I realized it was a real shark. The mother is very protective of her pup, but as soon as we can, marine biologists want to get DNA sample from both. Next story, John. A new study finds women who wear too much perfume could be depressed whores. Next story, John. Wrecked them, then near killed them.
Oh.
Officers at a Pima County jail caught one of the inmates smuggling drugs into the facility. Lieutenant Sean Stewart said Jason Panchalk, 36, arrived at the jail on December 20th. Stewart said he was facing 2 years for trafficking stolen property. According to the sergeant, all inmates are searched thoroughly. We stripped them down.
We have them open up in their mouths and make sure they don't have anything inside their mouth. Then we lift their tongue up, and then we have them squat and cough. If they got good muscles, they'll hold it up right up in there. Street said Pawn Chalk managed to conceal contraband in his rectum. He had some syringes, matches, a lighter, heroin, marijuana, an assortment of pills. Next story, John.
I thought you were going to say, and a Beetle.
Next story,
a Volkswagen
John.
Beetle.
A new study, another new study says having children can impact your friendships. In other news, Wesley Snipes is black, Britney Spears is trailer trash, and my cock is two times the size of yours. Next story, John.
Wow.
Are you happy to see me, or did somebody draw a big dick on your face with permanent marker? Scott Massey passed out late Saturday night at an apartment at the Point on North Tennessee Boulevard. He awoke to find three men standing around him laughing. Massey then realized someone had drawn a picture of male genitalia on his face with black magic marker while he was asleep. When he awoke, the three men identified as Zach Mangrum, Charles Searcy, and Evan Revor ran out of his apartment. He went outside to find out who put a penis on his face. Massey approached the three men, demanding to know who wrote on his face. During the argument, the three victims stated Mr. Massey pulled out a pocket knife out of his pants, opened the blade, and started pointing the knife at all three of them. Revor stated Mr. Massey, while holding the knife, was yelling he was going to start cutting people until he found out who drew a penis on his face. Anderson spoke with four men. He charged Massey with three counts of aggravated assault, and the police report didn't state if Massey ever found out who wrote a dick on his face. Next story, John. Idaho man uses sleight of hand to fool Satan. A man who believed he bore the mark of the beast amputated one of his hands, put it in the microwave, and summoned authorities. A man in his mid-20s was calm when deputies arrived at his home in North Idaho Town Saturday afternoon, and neither he nor the severed hand bore any noticeable tattoo or any other mark. The man, whose name was withheld, was in protective custody in a mental hospital in Kootenaia Medical Center in Cuar de Alina, where he and the hand were taken by ambulance. Hospital spokesman Lisa Johnson would not comment and say whether the attempt was made to reattach the hand, citing the patient confidentiality restrictions. He put a tourniquet on his arm before so he didn't bleed too much. That kind of mental illness is just sad. The New Testament book of Revelation contains a passage in which an angel is quoted as saying, according to the New International Version of the Bible, if anyone worships the beast and his image and receives his mark on the forehead or on the hand, he too will drink the wine of God's fury. Next story,
wow,
John.
Let's give him a hand.
That's a good one. Moron arrested after driving truck into house. A moron arrested after driving truck into a house. A man was arrested late Friday after he drove his truck into a house in Texas. 20-year-old Brian Scott Moron was arrested after failing a sobriety test. His blood alcohol level was twice the legal limit. Next story, John. This next story is a Polish joke. How did the Polish guy find out his wife was cheating on him?
I don't know.
He tried to get laid at a brothel that she happened to work at.
Oh, nice.
A Polish man got the shock of his life when he visited a brothel and spotted his wife among the establishment's employees. Polish tabloid Super Express said the woman had been making some extra money on the side while telling her husband she worked at the store at a nearby town. I was dumbfounded. I thought I was dreaming, the husband told the
He's
newspaper.
Polish. He's Polish. He's not a hillbilly.
The couple married for 14 years are now divorcing.
Wow.
Next story time. Are you happy to see me, or are those $300 worth of stolen knives in your pants? A man who hid hunting knives in his pants to try to steal them from a Western Michigan store tripped while fleeing and stabbed himself in the abdomen. The suspect was hospitalized after Monday night's attempt theft from Meijer Incorporated. Store in Grand Rapids and is expected to face misdemeanor shoplifting charges. Unfortunately,
The wounds did not appear to be life-threatening. Next story, John. Next and last story, John. Our next and last story contains a cheating wife, an angry husband, and a severed cow's head. A man who mailed a bloody cow's head to his wife's lover has been sentenced to probation and community service. Jason Michael Fife understands that in a civilized society, a person cannot send a severed cow's head to anybody, said his defense lawyer, Henry Hills. The victim received the package containing the cow's head with a puncture wound in its skull. Police said Fife, 31, got the cow's head from a butcher shop, claiming he wanted the dried skull for decoration. Instead, he mailed the frozen head so as not to alert parcel carriers to the contents. The box became bloody after sitting on the victim's doorstep on a warm day. Police were able to trace the package and threaten emails to Fife. My client did step over the line, but one can certainly understand his frustration, given that the victim was carrying on a sordid affair with my client's wife, his lawyer said. And that's the news, John.
Wow.
Well, it's good to be back. But I have to go. I'm leaving.
You motherfucker.
All right. Thanks for coming, Phil, again. Yeah.
Thanks for letting me in late again.
Yeah. All right.
Next time I'll bring the gun inside.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Fucking hit him!
Whoa.
Whoa! Shot right at the door.
Did he just threaten us?
I guess so. Look out! Whoa! He shot again!
I don't know if we could have him back.
Jesus Christ, what's he doing out there? God damn it.
Maybe your wife's gonna call the police. That would be something
else. I hope so.
Then Phil would be in his own news.
You motherfucker!
All right, thanks for hanging out and listening to us.
Comes to a close, 116.
116, and don't forget to call us on 847-TTN-JIZZED, 847-886-4493. That's the TTN hotline. Leave a message.
Oh, you know what? Leave a prediction. We're going to have a prediction show coming up. We're going to pull Sylvia Brown's predictions. Pat Robertson, I'm sure, will make predictions for 2008. We'll play those clips. We'll make predictions of our own. And if you want to get in on that, call that and leave your prediction for 2008.
847-886-4493. And I got to say, shout out to Tony Hearn from Punky Radio. He and Steph left me a nice little text message on my phone and wishing us and me a happy new year and nice Christmas and all that. The same to them. I couldn't text back because the company I use, Verizon, does not do international. So, yeah.
They accept international.
Right.
And charge you for it.
Right.
But will not allow you to send
international. Won't allow me to send it.
Right on.
So we'll take it out with one of the tunes we did at practice. I'm the man.
I'm the man, John.
Yeah, you are.
I'm the man.
All right, we're out of here. Total Talk Nights, John Scott. I'm John.
I'm Scott.
Later.
Listen now. You know I'm going to make a comeback. Like the bees and the trees, it's a short by smash. I'll speak to the masses, to the media. And if you got anything to do, you better say it with cash. So baby, we can get along fine. Give me all your money, cause I know you think I'm funny. Can't you hear me laughing? Can't you hear me smile? I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. And I gave you the I'm the man, man, I'm the man, I'm the man, I'm the man. And I gave you the yo-yo. You gonna sing, Scott, or what? Kung Fu. That was one of my good ones. So what's a few bones, we all know it's good, clean fun. Skateboards, I almost make them respectable. You see, a kid always get through to you, so I go for your son. I had a giant of a shock, and it really made a smart. Did you look and look and look at all that blood? Give me all your money, cause I know you think I'm funny. Can't you hear me laughing? Can't you hear me smile off the bat? Man, I'm the man, I'm the man.
listening to John and Scott on Total Talk Nonsense.